using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 15th of April, year of our Lord, 2024. Well, we had a close call with war. May not be over yet in the Middle East. We'll talk about that. But as everybody is focusing on that, the EPA is coming for local food production, meat production, using the same metrics to create rules without any input from our congressman, who just sat by dumbly and watched this happen. They create new rules to do exactly what the World Economic Forum is doing in Holland. And then Biden is working to increase the price of fuel by a 15-fold. That's 15 times more expensive. Who needs a war in the Middle East to create hyperinflation? We got Bo Peck. Yeah, Bo Biden Peck. Well, make no mistake about it, folks. Our government is at war with us. They seek to starve us of food and fuel on this April the 15th, money as well. When you look at what they're doing domestically, it's no wonder that they want to take us to war, right? Let's focus on other war. What can we do to start these wars up, to get them going? So we're going to take a quick look before we get into what is happening domestically. So what happened in the Middle East between Israel and Iran over the weekend, and we'll take a look at Ukraine coming up. It's interesting how very simple new technology has stalemated really expensive tanks. It's kind of interesting, you know, when Biden says threatens so many times a civil war, and we have the civil war entering into Trump's speech in a really stupid way, of course, but. As Biden and Eric Swalwell and Beto O'Rourke, I want to brag about how they've got a big military. They got tanks and they got planes and they got bombs and they can take our guns. Well, if you take a look at what's happening with cheap commercial drones in Ukraine, it has brought both sides to a standstill. It is a no man's land. As I was showing you last week, a clip of that, I said, you want to know what civil war is going to look like? You have no idea how this is going to unfold, They're afraid to use their tanks. I mean, it's happened to our most advanced tanks, the M1 Abrams, as Russia said, they burn like all the rest. They seem to be very vulnerable from top-down strikes. But let's first talk about Iran and Israel. Iran this weekend fired some 300-plus drones, missiles, etc., ballistics, cruise missiles, drones, suicide drones, and the first ever direct attack. Now, 99% of those were downed. And we may have an opportunity if these people want war, we'll see, right? If they don't choose this as an opportunity to stand down, then we'll know who the instigators of war are. We had, and of course, the press is going to ignore the fact that this was precipitated by, this is not the first ever direct attack. The first ever direct attack was Israel attacking the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, to assassinate two generals. When you strike an embassy, that is the same as striking that country. That is that country's soil, even though it's within a foreign country. Everybody treats the embassy as a part of that country. So the Iranian embassy is Iranian soil. And so it began there. They responded with 300-plus drones. The good news is that only one seven-year-old girl was injured by falling shrapnel as these drones were intercepted. So no casualties, not really any destruction. Some of the cruise missiles or something got through and hit the airport, but apparently from pictures that have resurfaced, Israel went to the point of showing that planes were still landing there. Don't know if that's a new video or an old video. See, that's the thing. When we talk about war, the fog of war, the massive amount of propaganda on both sides. That's why I don't talk about it a great deal. It's difficult to sort through what's true and what isn't. Now, they're saying that the airports are not impaired whatsoever, but that would be the only damage. And so, will they stop at this point? Or will Israel counterattack? We'll see who wants war. So, as part of this, you also had, it's not just coming from Iran, but of course, it was also coming from their surrogates, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also the Houthis in Yemen, also attacking at the same time. And as I said, a 7-year-old girl was in serious condition, hit by falling shrapnel. Nobody else seems to have been hurt. Now, this gave an opportunity for Biden or somebody in his staff to say the only wise thing I've ever heard Biden say, the only wise thing I've ever heard him say, take the win and stop. Will they? Will Israel take this as a win? Right? Look, they sent all this stuff, over 300 things sent in. You intercepted virtually every single one of them. Nothing really damaged and nobody killed. Can you declare victory and stop it at this point? Or are you going to escalate this? That's the question. And so it appears that Iran wants to leave it at this. They seem satisfied, even though they just whiffed, you know, took a big lot of big swings at Israel and missed every single time. But Tehran said the punishment of Israel is completed. Again, they said their quote from their guy, Zionist regime crossed the red line. And that would be the bombing of an embassy, foreign embassy, bombing of Iranian soil to assassinate the two generals. But in a sense, maybe they will say that the victory is how much it cost Israel. Because in terms of money, again, nobody was hurt. But Israeli general, brigadier general, said the interceptors, the jet fuel, and other materials expended in the shooting down of Iran's unmanned aerial vehicles and cruise missiles cost about between $1 billion to $1.3 billion. The estimate included only Israel's direct cost, and it doesn't count considerable weaponry used by the U.S. and other allies to help defend against the attack. It wasn't just Israel's Iron Dome and things like that. It was also American warships, because again, there was stuff coming from Yemen. America was involved in terms of shooting these down, as they have been involved in taking out Houthi attacks on shipping. The Israeli general lamented that it was far cheaper for Iran to launch the attack than for Israel to defend itself. He said the attack cost Iran less than 10% of what it cost us to defend against it. There you go. There's asymmetric warfare from a financial standpoint. And we've seen this type of thing. This is what the U.S. always does, right? Use multi-million dollar countermeasures against something that maybe costs $10,000. He said in the future, in a year, 2 years, 5 years, they can carry out 50 such attacks. And let's say that if the IDF's net budget was 60 billion shekels, with less than double what you have, no chance of reaching a situation where we can maintain the required amounts. The kamikaze drones are cheap, and that's what I was talking about in Ukraine and Russia that we're seeing there as well. The changing technology is very rapidly changing and making obsolete a lot of these systems. If you remember going back to World War II, the Japanese came in attacking with an aircraft carrier and planes and took out what had been in the previous war, premier weapons with the battleships and things like that. And yet, just as their attack showed, it was the aircraft carriers and the airplanes that could be launched from them that was key in World War II. And those, fortunately, were out to see at the time that they attacked. Zero evidence shows several Iranian cruise missiles. Video evidence shows that they scored direct hits. Again, they said it was zero, but Israel is is declaring a victory. The U.S. is declaring a victory. Iran is declaring a victory. Everybody's winning. Let's stop. Except maybe the real victory is when they get the world at war. Is that maybe what they're after? It certainly is what people like Lindsey Graham are after and have been after for quite some time. The videos purport to show several missiles scoring direct hits on two key Israeli military bases. But as I said before, Israel has put out clips showing aircraft landing and so forth. But they've also put out some propaganda video about the attack. And a lot of the video that they put into the attack was old footage. Some not even from there. But here is some footage of what it looked like. Very horrific scene, isn't it? But this is war at a distance. Wait till it comes home. And this is what people want to bring to your home. This is what you need to understand. Lindsey Graham, Mike Johnson, and Democrats across the board want to bring that to your home. Well, you know, just imagine that happening at your home. And imagine that there is no defense. The U.S. is not set up to defend against any of these nuclear missiles coming in. So they said they're not looking for significant escalation. Now, this is Israel. The G7 had condemned Iran's direct and unprecedented attack against Israel. What people are saying is what has changed with this is the fact that Iran has been using proxies to attack. Now they're doing this directly. The question is, how long are we going to continue to use proxies like Ukraine to attack Russia before we do it directly? We're on the cusp of doing that ourselves. And yet, Israel directly attacked Iran and, has in the past. The U.S. and Israel have attacked. I mean, they've assassinated Iranian scientists and other things like that. Regardless of what you think in terms of the justification for it, it is still a direct attack. But they've always maintained this plausible deniability, Mission Impossible type stuff. Well, if you're caught or captured, we'll deny any connection to what you're doing. Now it's just we're going to do it and openly do it. And that's a line that's been crossed. It's been crossed by both sides. And we should all be very concerned about that. We should also be very concerned about preemptive strikes. It was an interesting article that was put up by the Drudge Report. And the reporter was saying that she thought that we had lost the ability to fight wars since World War II. It's like, lady, I don't know where you've been. We've been in a constant state of war. She said, yeah, we don't have the situation where we have the mass mobilization, people to go out and die and all the rest of the stuff. We just don't have the tough men like that. We got a lot of millennials who are sitting around. They wouldn't know what to do, and they're not going to die for country and all the rest of the stuff. And it's like, well, somebody needs to set her down and let her watch Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirate of Penzance, a great satire for that. Go, ye heroes, go and die, right? It's one of the songs, you know. It's like, and they're like looking around, it's like, what? Go. Well, and every mother's daughter, your graves will water with her tears, right? I mean, we have been in a constant state of war. And then she goes on to say, and sometimes, you know, we need to be able to defend our country, and sometimes we need to be able to attack, you know, preemptively, like Japan did, Pearl Harbor. Sometimes we need to be the first ones. Just because, you know, we look out there and we see evil on the horizon. Oh, we can smell it. We know. I can't define it for you, but, you know, we know it when we smell it. And even though those people haven't attacked us, we've got to go attack them first. That's the logic of Pearl Harbor. And once upon a time, before World War II, America was a country that was founded on Christian principles that still embraced the just war. And for somebody to do that was rightfully labeled a day of infamy. I know that FDR stood down. He knew about the attack. He let them attack. It doesn't excuse what they did. It just makes him a traitor. So as Brian Shalhavi at Vaccine Impact points out, he said, evangelical Christians praying for Armageddon. And I've seen that a lot myself. and it disgusts me. It really does. He says there was in March of 2023, several months before you had what broke out on October the 7th with Hamas, there was a film that was produced by a Norwegian film producer. It was a documentary film, Praying for Armageddon, when biblical prophecy fuels political power. Well, we got a lot of that, don't we? Instead of a just war, we have these people who want to push us to fight for Trump. They want to push us to fight for Israel. They want to push us to fight each other. You know, divide over Trump, divide over Biden, divide over this or that. And you got these false prophets like Julie Green telling everybody, oh, yeah, Trump is still president. He's going to be reinstalled. You have CIA operatives like Steve Pachinik and Alex Jones telling everybody about the, go to January the 6th. Trump didn't lose the election. We got the sting. We got all the records. People are even being arrested here 2 days after the election. Lie after lie after lie, and people follow them. Follow them. No. You know, Julie Green, people like John Hagee, the principles are clear. What is cloudy and convoluted and muddy are their prophecy charts. And I'm sick and tired of seeing these prophecy charts. Prophecy charts, Revelation is not about the end of the world. It's not about what's going to happen with Israel. It's a revelation of Jesus Christ. And they make it about everything else because they don't want to follow him as Lord. They would rather use him as Trump is using him. Oh, Jesus endorses Donald Trump. Oh, yeah, that was, where is that here? Yeah, right here. Look at this. This is sent to me by Mary Ellen Moore. She says, Free Mind Film. She said, this is being shared all over the place. You know, Roger Stone shared this. There's Trump, an American flag, and a Bible in the background. That's, by the way, not his his Trump Bible. And then says, endorsed by Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ doesn't do endorsements. Did you know that? Who does Trump endorse Jesus Christ? No. And Jesus Christ does not endorse Trump. He doesn't do endorsements. He is not on anybody's side, any political leader's side like that. You want to ask a question, you ask who is on the Lord's side, right? Not is God on our side. Yeah, God's my co-pilot. I'm driving. He's there. He's going to, maybe I'll need him. I don't know. The arrogance of these people. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at what is happening with Iran.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our Listen and Schedule pages on the Internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Well, I said when we come back, we'll talk about Iran. No, we're going to talk about Ukraine. I misspoke. And I want to talk about the drones. Again, the drones, the suicide drones, were a big part and are becoming a bigger and bigger part of everything. And U.S. drones in Ukraine are not performing too well. As a matter of fact, they're turning to China. They said the U.S. drones, rather than being a big profit center for some people who want to join the military-industrial complex, they don't seem to be very reliable, and they're very susceptible to jamming. Wall Street Journal says in an article, American drones failed to turn the tide in Ukraine, said the Silicon Valley company Skydio sent hundreds of its best drones to Ukraine to help fight the Russians, but things didn't go too well. Skydio's drones flew off course, were lost, victims of Russia's electronic warfare. The company has since gone back to the drawing board to build a new fleet. Because, as I said, they're glitchy, and they're expensive, too. Sounds like our drugs. Most small drones from U.S. startups have failed to perform in combat, dashing many companies' hopes that a badge of being battle-tested would bring the startups sale and attention. It's also bad news for the Pentagon, which needs a reliable supply of thousands of small unmanned aircraft, because that's going to be the key thing about drones. They're going to be swarms. Again, we looked at that excellent book, Looking at Drones, Military-Industrial Complex, and that's going to change things. Daniel Suarez, probably about a decade ago, he wrote Kill Decision, wasn't it? Yeah, about a decade. Travis is nodding his head. But, you know, as my son said when we were reading it, he said, nothing good ever comes in swarms, does it? That's especially true of these drones. The general reputation for every class of U.S. drone in Ukraine is that they don't work as well as other systems, said the CEO of Skydio. He called his own drone, quote, not very successful platform on the front lines. Ukrainian officials have found U.S.-made drones to be fragile, unable to overcome Russian jamming and GPS blackout technology. At times, they couldn't even take off. They couldn't complete missions or return home. American drones often fail to fly at the distances advertised or to carry substantial payloads. Ukraine has found ways to get tens of thousands of drones as well as drone parts from China. The military is using off-the-shelf Chinese drones, primarily from DJI Technology. Yeah, and the U.S. is not very happy about that drone company. They've done a lot of things at the federal level to try to obstruct it, just like they do with TikTok or with, trying to stop the Chinese 5G as well. But, you know, it's always been my experience that if you do something for a commercial market, it's a lot more demanding than the military even. You know, when I worked at Texas Instruments, we had some things that were commercial, but there were a lot of people who were doing things on the defense side that, and I interviewed with some companies before I took that job that wanted me to work in the defense, and it was very, very crude and primitive. They would have stuff that was very, very old before the government would allow it to be used. For example, in the space shuttle, well into the mid-1980s, they were still using core memory for RAM, which went back to the 1960s. Very unbelievably big, unbelievably heavy, and these are the two things that you don't want to have in a space shuttle. The only advantage that it had was that it would remember its state if it lost power. Core memory was a grid of electrical wires. You would have them in a, you know, like an XY grid, and then you would have diagonal wires running as sensors. And at the intersection of these three dimensions of wires, you would have little metal donuts, toroids, that could get magnetized. And so you could magnetize it or you could sense it with these things. But it was huge. And they didn't want to use semiconductor memory, which was orders of magnitude smaller and lighter and cheaper, again, because it hadn't been tested long enough. And so the military would get stuff, and it'd be very crude, it'd be big, bulky, hardened. They'd have to test it in the swamps. They'd have to test it in the Arctic and all the rest of this stuff. And by the time they went through all the different testing, everybody else had moved on in the consumer world. And so the consumer world was really where things were happening, more so than in the military world. And so you can kind of understand how the Chinese, in a more demanding consumer environment, they're not going to put up with the kind of malfunctioning things that the Pentagram always puts up with. So Skydio employees went back to Ukraine 17 times to get feedback, he said. This new drone is built around Ukraine's military needs and feedback from public safety agencies and other customers, he said, rather than getting information from the U.S. Defense Department. He said their requirements are sometimes divorced from battlefield realities. Yeah, we notice that, you know, when they're marching around in red high heels and telling everybody that climate change and gender pronouns are really their key mission. I think our Defense Department is absolutely divorced from battlefield realities. They're divorced from realities of every kind. Anyway, this is Mike Shedlock talking about it. He said, I suspect China is selling drones and drone parts to both Ukraine and to Russia. He says, what a racket. Well, that's what the military-industrial complex in America has always done. We arm both sides, don't we? Chinese are just following our example. So drones are crowding Ukraine's skies. And it's not just the Ukrainians. It's also the Russians who have caught on to this as well. You know, the Ukrainians started using it as an equalizer, but the Russians quickly started doing their own as well. So many drones patrol the skies over Ukraine's front lines at hunting for any signs of movement that Ukrainian and Russian troops have little ability to move on the battlefield without being spotted and blown up. Instead, on missions, they rush from one foxhole to another, hoping the pilots manning the enemy drones overhead are not skilled enough to find them inside. Expert drone operators, their abilities honed on the front, can stalk just a single foot soldier to their death, diving after them into hideouts and trenches. Remember, I showed this about a week or so ago, and this is the drone kill that was identified in the video as AI. And I don't think it was AI. I think this is a drone operator. They're not to the point. They're making this stuff, homegrown drones and all the rest of the stuff. Do you really think they're hooking this in with AI? I'm sure there's people who are working on that. But when you look at this video of a soldier down on the ground and pretending that he is dead, and the drone comes in and flies in, I don't think this is under AI control. I think a human is doing it. They go past it. They turn around and see that, and then they fly back in and kill the guy. I showed that, and I said, this is what civil war is going to look like in the United States. And it isn't it interesting that this is going back really to a kind of stalemate like we had in World War I, where they dug the trenches. Everybody's just dug in, and that's what's happening now because of the drones. New technology, nobody really knows how to deal with it. It's neither side has an advantage, so it's just a stalemate. The surge in small drones in Ukraine has turned the area beyond either side of the zero line into the death zone. Those who dare to move day or night under the prying eyes of enemy drones are dead immediately. Cheap drones deployed in Ukraine have transformed modern warfare, but the Russians quickly caught on and began mass producing their own. What followed was an overabundance of disposable, deadly drones and electronic warfare devices known as jammers that disrupt their flights. Most common are the first-person view, or the FPV drones, typically controlled by a pilot wearing a headset and holding a remote controller. I think that's what you just saw there. That's not artificial intelligence, by any means. Absolutely not. But again, what is going to be concerning is when they do map it up with artificial intelligence. What we're witnessing right now is blitzkrieg drone warfare, said the chief of staff at Brink Drones, a Seattle-based drone company. He said, drones in Ukraine are as game-changing as tanks were in World War I. It is pretty stalemate. Now, the interesting thing, I think, is this jamming stuff. I'm surprised And again, I think that it harkens back to just how crude these things are. But I'm surprised that the Russians haven't done something with this. When I was just working as a college intern at a company that was working on this type of thing, they had a phased antenna array that could frequency hop to get around jamming. And it could also, with a phased array of antennas, it could analyze jamming signals that were coming in and friendly signals that were coming in. And it could adjust those different antenna elements in that array to create a null where the jamming signal was coming from and to magnify and, you know, focus in on where your friendly signal was coming from at the same time. Now, that was 45 years ago or more. Yeah, more than 45, almost 50 years ago. That's 50-year-old technology, but, you know, they should be able to do that now. Even with this quasi-consumer stuff. It's kind of surprising to me that it's not being done. I understand if Ukraine is putting the stuff together in garages and things like that, but I'm surprised that the Russians haven't done it. These conditions, combined with widespread minefields and shortage of ammunition and soldiers, now makes it virtually impossible for Ukraine to retake swaths of territory as it did in 2022. Russia, which has ample missile stocks and superior aviation power, capitalized on Ukraine's ammunition shortages to seize the strategic town of Avdiivka and is now pushing to take more land. Ukraine will rely on drones to make it difficult for Russians to press forward without putting expensive Russian fighting vehicles at risk whenever they move. So the game changer of a century ago, the tank, has now become essentially worthless because of this game changer, the cheap drone. And so this is Washington Post talking about it. And all of this, the purpose of this article is to chide Republicans for not giving more money and equipment to Ukraine, of course. The warmongering Democrats. Ukrainian factories are producing a wide range of drone models, including ones that strike inside of Russia. And civilian volunteers are building FPVs themselves, following directions on YouTube. The jamming signals, which disrupt drone frequencies and turn pilots' screens to static, have made missions even more difficult. Sometimes, he says, we're flying almost blind. There's little besides jamming the signal the troops can do to protect themselves from a drone. They often watch as Russian troops, holding assault rifles, try to save their lives by shooting down his explosive-laden drones before they can crash into them. What you just saw there. A guy who runs a drone unit in eastern Ukraine, 35-year-old Stanislav, says the most challenging thing to figure out is if it's Ukrainian or Russian drones. When you see 10 drones in the sky, there's no way to understand if it's our drones coming back after reconnaissance in a Russian-controlled territory, or if it's their drones coming for reconnaissance or to attack us. Although the jamming system he uses, developed by a Ukrainian company, helps to disrupt Russian flights, they also hamper his own. Again, I don't understand why they're not taking advantage of something that military is working on 50 years ago. Russia knows how valuable drone pilots are to Ukraine and are targeting our drone operators with aerial guided bombs and GRAD systems, he said. So, again, that is the state of the art in that warfare. As we look at autonomous killer robots and drone swarms, the wave of the future, the godfather of AI warns of battle robots. Again, it's tying this stuff in with AI, which is going to be the killer app, I guess we could say. The world could encounter major disasters before the use of AI weapons is regulated in a proper manner, according to Turing Award-winning scientist Jeffrey Hinton, seen as a pioneer of the technology. Years ago, I talked to Dr. Noel Sharkey, who is pioneer of the efforts to try to stop killer robots. Unfortunately, that hasn't, and that's not going to have any effect. Because we're in the middle of an arms race. You know, we got to do it before the other guys. And it's even worse. You know, they want to, you know, turn over more and more control to the AI, because if they don't, the opponent's AI will destroy their drones while the human is still thinking about it. And so they're going to put these things on autopilot. And then how do you control that? How do you turn it off once you put it on auto kill? Jeffrey Hinton is a former Google engineer, quit the company last year. He compared the use of the technology for military purposes to chemical weapons deployment, warning that, quote, very nasty things, unquote, will occur before the global community arrives at a comprehensive agreement comparable to the Geneva Conventions, which we don't obey anyway, right? That's the reality. We don't obey the Geneva Convention. We don't obey the, just take a look at the CIA torture, which is then used to produce lies, which lied us into Iraq. We don't care about that. We don't enforce it. Various countries, you have to enforce it on yourself. You have to care as a country that we follow principles, and we don't care. The threat I spoke about is the existential threat, said Professor Hinton. These things will get much more intelligent than us, and they will take over. And again, this is not just AI fear-mongering. It doesn't even have to be self-aware. It could be used as a kind of false flag and say, well, I don't know what happened. It must be a software error. I'm sorry. We just wiped out this other area. But let's not have a war over it. You know, these types of things happen. Or say that to their own people. Yeah, you know, it was supposed to kill the enemy, but it killed, took out this friendly city here. But, you know, things like that happen. It's just a software area. Nobody's bad. Nobody's at fault. So one of the threats are battle bots, which make it much easier for rich countries to wage war on smaller, poorer countries. They're going to be very nasty, and I think they are inevitably coming. Well, that's not the only place where it's going to be. Trump, by the way, suggested in terms of Ukraine, he's got an idea here. His big difference between him and Biden is that he's going to give Ukraine everything they want, but we'll call it a loan. Maybe someday they'll pay us back. Maybe they won't. But if we call it a loan, that'll make it all better. It just goes to show you how calculus is the love of money, the root of all evil, and not the love of people. He's willing to let the people die so they can have the claim that, well, you know, we're spending all this money, but it is a loan, and maybe they will pay us back someday. That's where Trump and Mike Johnson are. We keep handing out gifts of billions and billions of dollars, and we'll take a look at it, said Trump. But much more importantly to me is the fact that Europe has to step up, and they have to give more money. See, same thing he was doing with NATO. Did he stop NATO? No. Did he allow NATO to keep pushing for war and expansion? Yes. Was he whining about money and how they have to spend more money so that he could get them to arm up so they could give the money to Ukraine for this, our surrogate soldiers there? Yeah. Yeah. So he's using this as a prod to get Europe to give more money to Ukraine. He's going to still give the money. He's going to pretend that he's fiscally responsible after setting the precedent that we're going to spend $3 to $6 trillion a year. We're now going into another $1 trillion in debt every 100 days, or about every 3 months. And he set that precedent, you know, that's about $4 trillion a year. He did that with the pandemic garbage and a bit beyond. So it's another Trump precedent. Zelensky told a local broadcaster last week his government would be open to accepting U.S. aid in the form of a loan if that's the only option left. Sure, I'll sign the paper. Yeah, same thing Trump says when he goes to borrow money from a bank or his casinos, or when he goes to borrow money from the Rothschilds to bail him out when the original loan that he put in at like 15% goes upside down. Zelensky says, you know, a senator was here recently and asked me, would you agree to take a loan money? And I said, what are the options? He said, well, if, for example, they tell you that the money is a loan or you don't get it. And I said, well, what's the point of such an election if there is no choice? Well, that's interesting. He's not actually talking about election, but he's saying, you know, why give me a choice when there is no choice? But of course, Zelensky also did cancel elections in his country. He also did jail his political opponents. Why are we supporting this guy, by the way? He said, let's be honest, we will agree to any option. Yeah, sure. I'll sign anything. I don't care. These people will swear to uphold the Constitution, to take office in America. They don't care what they sign up to. By the way, Ukraine has passed a new conscription law, aims to drag in 500,000 more bodies because, you know, we got to fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. That was what the Indian military analyst said at the very beginning of it. He said, this is a plan to fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. And when you look at this, this is another good example of how there is so much disinformation, so much lies, propaganda, and fog of war that you can't even get the truth about the draft. The full text of the law was not immediately available. Oh, they're operating just like the U.S. Congress under Mike Johnson as well as Nancy Pelosi, right? Sorry, can't show you that law. We got to pass it to find out what's in it. But among the most immediately controversial elements will include expanded powers to give Ukrainian authorities to issue draft notices on a larger scale, including using an electronic system. Yeah, that's right. Just get your World Economic Forum ID that they're bragging about. You know, after the war is over and Ukraine has won, and in 2030, Ukraine is going to have this wonderful digital ID system. And all the things that the government imposes on you, you can just handle those so conveniently and comply so conveniently using your digital ID. It also reportedly expands the age of the draft registration, including for those living abroad. But the most controversial aspect is that a key provision got quashed, which would have assured rotation of servicemen. Oh, you don't need to do that. They were going to give the guys a break after they had been in combat for 36 straight months, but now that's gone as well. No, we're not going to take out the battle-hardened troops. We're just going to add more people in there. Demobilizing soldiers on the front lines now would deprive Ukrainian forces of their most capable fighters. Besides, what they were talking about last week, oh, well, we're going to change the age of conscription from 27 to 25. That looks pretty doubtful as well. Looks like that's also pure Bolshevik. Lindsey Graham was complaining about that. You got to get those people out there now. I know it's a meat grinder, but you know, you got to get these young folks out there. Not him. Right. This law requires all Ukrainian men 18 to 60 years old in Ukraine and abroad to register at the military draft. Oh, but of course they're not going to use it. They're just registering that, right? No, they will. They will. So all this 27 to 25, no, goes down to 18. Probably earlier than that, I just mentioned last week, the fact they kidnapped a young athlete. They thought he was older because he was an athlete and he was buffed up. He had to show them his driver's license thing. Well, you know, this guy is under, if he's that young, if he's in high school, why would they be looking, how could they mistake a high school guy for thinking that he's 27 years old? Do you really think so? We need more people in the line, says Lindsey Graham. But he's not getting in line. Ukraine exempts men under 27 from being conscripted. This is what this article says at Zero Hedge. But again, do we know that? Do we know that? Or is this, which one is true? Ukrainians are generally only fighting for their lives once they're shipped east to fight an American-cultivated proxy war, says David Stockman. It has been either a Russian vassal or appendage for centuries, Ukraine has. The term Ukraine actually means borderlands in Russian. That was one of the things at the very beginning. You know, you talk about the Ukraine. No, it's Ukraine. No the. Ukraine was an area, always has been, for the Russians, and it's been there for 400 years. Russians have had control over that area. The Russian control of Crimea and Ukraine, all the rest of this stuff, has been there as long as our country has been in existence. Britain had the Crimean War, or you had the glorification of it by Tennyson. You know, ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do or die. And I guess they're not talking about the UK anymore, they're talking about the Ukrainians. They had Lord Cardigan and his stupid charge of the Light Brigade, which is a blunder that he had. Anyway, on a trip to Ukraine last May, Graham gleefully crowed that the Russians are dying and that aid to Zelensky's government is, quote, the best money we've ever spent. And he is a big advocate of giving a war and calling it a loan. That's the way they're going to sell it. They're going to sugarcoat it. Trump and his war hawk advisor, Lindsey Graham, on the same page with one thing after the other. Graham said, I think the loan idea is going to be pretty popular, not just amongst Republicans, but also Democrats. Yeah, all of them will have an excuse now. Well, don't worry about the money. We'll get it back. Well, quite frankly, I'm not so worried about the money. I'm worried about the war you guys are trying to start, the world war you're trying to start everywhere. Graham is among the most relentless and reckless of D.C. warmongers. Zero Hedge says, here's a sampling of Zero Hedge headlines from just the last year. Watch, Lindsey Graham says the U.S. should start shooting Russian planes down. Lindsey Graham says he would support sending American troops to Taiwan. Lindsey Graham says the only way to keep Hamas and Israel from escalating is to attack Iran's oil. Lindsey Graham urges Biden to blow Iran off the map over Red Sea attacks. Now, Zero Hedge says he isn't actually a full-fledged chicken hawk because, you know, he is part of the U.S. Air Force Reserve. As a lawyer, and I, you know, so somebody wrote me about this and said, well, he's actually in the military. It's like, come on. He was in that for 33 years. Did he ever go anywhere and do anything? Did he ever fight in any of these wars that he was creating? No, he was there as a lawyer. And quite frankly, I think he's worse than a chicken hawk who never even signs up. This guy signed up, got on the legal corps, make sure that he's not going to have to go anywhere. So he can then double dip with a pension as if he needs any more as a senator. He has shed no blood, no sweat, no tears in any of these wars that he has started. And I frankly don't care if he signed up to get his pension out of the U.S. Air Force Reserve. That doesn't make a bit of difference.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Secrets of the Rapture. Is there a 500-year-old conspiracy? A propaganda machine so pervasive and entrenched, yet so elusive that the entire world could be taken in by it? Working in plain sight, but unseen by the world for what it truly is? If prophecy is God-given history in advance, why does the prophecy that has conquered the age also exclude nearly 2,000 years of history? What is it that they are afraid that the light of history will reveal? To understand our place in time and prophecy, we must look in history for an interpretation, that which stands the test of time, that which agrees with the Word of God, and history has proven to be true. When cunning fables and fearful speculations are removed from our sight, then we may clearly see what is truly expressed in Bible prophecy, both that which has been fulfilled and that which has yet to come. God's express word is the sword that must be wielded to remove the scales from the eyes and dispel the darkness of deceitful conjecture. Secrets of the Rapture was written to expose that which the spirit of the age has conjured out of the darkness to blind the eyes of the church in the world today. Secrets of the Rapture, Deconstructing Pre-Tribulation Dispensational Futurism by yours truly, Nicholas Arthur, is now available at lulu.com and Amazon. Secrets of the Rapture.
Well, let's talk about war. The war that really matters. The war that's here at home. The spiritual war. I was surprised to see over the weekend, there was a Christian conference for men. They call it the Stronger Men's Conference. And, you know, I talked a few months ago, I guess it was maybe, you know, before Christmas, maybe last fall. Anyway, talked to a guy who's now head of Promise Keepers. He's very based as a Christian. He wrote a book. He talked about the fact they don't do these big events anymore. They're doing smaller events in different places. And I can kind of understand why. When you look at this event, they're talking about a Stronger Men's Conference. It looks like a bunch of boys with toys. It looks pretty silly, quite frankly. And it looks pretty dumbed down and degenerate as well. But first of all, what do they do? Travis, see if you can pull this article up. the tank driving over the cars and the pyrotechnics going off, all the rest. A promo video for this year's Stronger Men's Conference opens up with a montage of men lifting weights, revving motorcycle engines, and boxing. Then, as the song soars with lyrics of being ready to fight, a wrestler smashes a chair into the head of another man dressed up as a superhero, and a monster truck flies through pyrotechnics. A bull rider gets bucked, a cowboy snaps his whip, and more chairs get smashed over the superheroes' heads, interspersed with sermon clips. Well, we don't wrestle with flesh and blood or with monster cars. Strong men? There's the clip. Thank you for getting that. Strong men? These are boys looking for toys. This is just pure entertainment. And look, there's nothing wrong with pure entertainment. You want to go to something like this, a big truck show or something like that. Fine. I don't care about it. I'm not going to criticize you for that. But this is not about building stronger men. Let's just be honest. This is just about boyish entertainment. It has nothing to do with building strong men. And as an example of it, the way they opened their conference was with a male stripper on a pole. A male stripper on a pole for a men's conference. He was billed as the finest swordsman in all the world. Slowly circled a pole on a stage, he peeled off his red leather top, slid his tongue up to the tip of the sword, swallowed the sword all the way down to his throat. Then later he begins to climb the pole that was erected for the opening of this weekend's Stronger Men's Conference in Springfield, Missouri. Now, one of the speakers who was there, Mark Driscoll, who was a mega church pastor himself, and he's got his own background stories. I'm not going to get into any of that, but he was somebody who really focused on maybe too much on male issues. But again, I'm not going to get into what was going on. They tried to make it about him. It wasn't about him. It was about what happened at this conference. And this is how he pushed back on it. And as he's pushing, if you're looking at the video feed, you can see in an inset some pictures of what this male stripper was doing to open this Christian men's conference.
But let me do this. I've been up since 1 o'clock in the morning. The reason I'm hoarse is I have been praying for you, and my heart is very burdened for you. And I want to be very careful with this, and it's not what I want to say, but the Jezebel spirit has already been here. The Jezebel spirit opened our event. This is a rebuke and a correction of no one. This is an observation. Before the word of God was open, there was a platform. It was a high place. On it was a pole, an asherah. The same thing that's used in the strip club for women who have the Jezebel spirit to seduce men. In front of that was a man who ripped his shirt off like a woman does in front of a pole at a strip club. That man then ascended. See, our God is not arrogant. He doesn't ascend. Our God is humble. He descends. And then he swallowed a sword, and Jesus Christ, okay, Pastor John, I'll receive that. Thank you.
Wow. And that's a reaction. And everybody starts yelling, picking up signs on this. And so you heard somebody say, "You're out of line, Mark." And then he says, and he keeps talking. He says, "Mark." And he says, "Okay, Pastor John, I'll receive that. You're done." And the guy that's yelling that is also a pastor of James River Church. His name is John Lindell, and he's got a a large church there. And it's like, you're out. Get out of this conference type of thing. And the people who sided with him said, well, Mark Driscoll, if he had a problem with it, he should have said something to him privately. I'm sorry, you didn't do this privately. You did this publicly. So a lot of people there started yelling, bring him back, bring him back. And then Lindell got up to the mic. He said, Mark was out of line. If Mark wanted to say that, he should have said it to me. He didn't. Matthew 18, if your brother offends you, you go to him privately. He didn't do this privately. John Lindell did not do this privately. He did it publicly. And he needed to be rebuked publicly for what he was doing there. He said, I talked to Mark for half an hour. There was not one word of that. He's out of line. If he wants to say it, he can say it to me. Well, he probably knows that if he said it to you privately, you wouldn't let him get on there to say it publicly. Anyway, what do you think Jesus would do with this? Well, we know what he did to the money changers, don't we? I think if he had done exactly what Jesus would do, he would have made a cord of whips and he would have driven John Lindell out of that theater, this conference, this men's conference that he organized. Isn't that pathetic? You see, that's why we're losing the culture. Because we've lost Christ. We've lost our vision of what that is about. And again, these other people who are trying to make excuses for this attacked Mark Driscoll. I'm not here to defend Mark Driscoll or anything that he's done, or to talk about it either. But the bottom line is that he said the right thing. The other guy said the wrong thing. Let's just leave it at that in this particular instance. Pyrotechnics, explosions, and guys coming down ropes. And as they are selling this to everybody. And again, there's nothing wrong with having fun like that. But that was not good, clean fun. So when we've got people who don't know their right hand from the left, it's no wonder that our kids that we've turned over to the government schools to raise don't know whether they're male or female. It's no wonder that our society is clamoring to kill babies in the womb. As a matter of fact, this story, USA Today, takes on this video that's put together by Live Action, a pro-life organization called Baby Olivia. It's a computer-generated thing. It talks about the baby development from fertilization of the egg and various ages and all this kind of stuff. And because they begin with fertilization of the egg, you have the only line of response that these murdering abortionists have is to say, well, they're talking about this baby 2 weeks older than it really is, because they don't start it at the point of fertilization. They start it at the point of another measurement. But I think that's a good place to start it with. But that's the only criticism that they've got. See, the real problem is they don't like people seeing the humanity, kids seeing the humanity. And where this is coming in, you've got several states, Tennessee is one of them, where they are mandating that this baby Olivia video, it's like a 3-minute video showing the development of a human baby, they have mandated this be shown to students. Well, they wanted sex education. Let's tell them what happens with sex. Let's show them what happens. Meet baby Olivia, says USA Today, a 3-minute video produced by the anti-abortion group Live Action, the foundation of the latest bill that some states are considering to further dissuade people from having the procedure. The bills would have students watch the video in health class. In Tennessee, the legislation is a Senate vote away from landing on the governor's desk. In Missouri, the bill would require the video be shown by the time students reach the third grade. It is also being considered in Iowa and Kentucky. Instead of getting information based on science, USA Today says the baby Olivia video's purpose is to dissuade viewers from choosing an option that is already heavily stigmatized. No, it's not. No, it's not. They got people bragging about their abortions, pushing it. They didn't stigmatize that, just like they don't stigmatize gender changes. As a matter of fact, they stigmatize anything that's the opposite of it. They stigmatize having kids. They stigmatize staying, being the gender that you are. So what will hurt students? Well, one thing that you could do in your sex education classes is tell students not to engage in that. You know, wait till you're older, wait till you're married, but they don't do that. Instead, what we have is a pattern, which goes back to this video here about the men's conference, right? The Ashtaroth poll or the Shira poll. This is something that was prevalent throughout the area where Israel is now and through northern Africa where Carthage was, you know, in the Canaanite area, you know, what the Romans later called Palestine, the Carthaginian area, northern Africa. It was all of them had these pagan religions where they would have orgies. The poles that they would set up everywhere were part of these, you know, the festivals for Ashtaroth, the goddess, sex goddess. So they have these orgies, and then, you know, like, you know, 9 months later, whenever, they would also then have ceremonies to where you'd pass your child through the fire to Moloch. You would sacrifice your child. They would heat up this altar, burning hot, and put the live babies on this the lap of this god of Moloch and burn them alive. Now, that's almost as bad as ripping them apart limb by limb that we do today, right? But they would do that, and they would tell people, this is your prosperity, the same way that the Planned Parenthood will tell young children or single moms or whatever, you got to kill this baby. You can't give it up for adoption or do anything else because, you know, it's going to be a financial burden on you. Do you realize how much it's going to cost to raise this child to the age of 18? You have $1 million or whatever the number is that they come up with it? Of course, nobody does. You don't need to have it as a lump sum up front. But that's the way they couch it. And so you have, you know, the Brave New World sex orgy society with the poles and all the rest of it. You have that followed up with the child sacrifice. So history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly does rhyme, doesn't it? And so does pagan religion. And so that's where we are with this. The medical experts, though, say the video's timeline is about 2 weeks earlier than what doctors agree upon. And So that is really quibbling. What they're concerned about is the humanity being shown. That is why Fox fired Matt Drudge, because he showed the humanity of that baby reaching up with its tiny hand and grabbing the pinky of the surgeon as he was operating on it before it was born. You cannot show the humanity of a baby. They weren't showing a baby being ripped apart. They were showing a baby that was being helped, and they showed the humanity of that baby. And so USA Today says, so why not focus on sex education instead? Yeah, we know where this focus on sex education has led, don't we? It's actually led to more promiscuity. It's actually led to the degeneracy of the trans movement and the gaslighting of kids. We see that it has led us into the world described by Huxley in Brave New World, but it's Brave New Schools. And so Live Action reports to these types of, responds rather to these types of attacks, specifically to the USA Today op-ed piece. They said it's not the video is inaccurate, which they repeatedly claim. They claim it'll mislead people. Will 2 weeks make that much of a difference to them? They said it's because this video tracks the baby's development from fertilization instead of from the mother's last menstrual period, an estimated 2 weeks before the baby is existence. So the specific issue they take with Meet Baby Olivia is that by sharing a realistic look at the development of children in the womb, it might make women and teenage girls, quote, feel guilty, unquote, or stigmatize them, unquote. Do they ever try to make people feel guilty? Do they ever try to stigmatize, ostracize people? Of course they do. But that's not what this is about. It's just simply showing people the truth. It might stigmatize them, make them feel guilty about having an abortion, and therefore not have an abortion when faced with an unplanned pregnancy. The problem, by their own admission, is that USA Today and these left-wing media groups are afraid that more babies will live. A poll by the pro-life organization Focus on the Family found that when women who are undecided about whether to end a pregnancy are shown an ultrasound, 78% did not have an abortion. Years ago, when Karen was working for a pro-life organization called Birth Choice, in the mid-80s, and I said, they need to take all their money And they need to do a massive fundraising thing, and they need to get as much money as they can, and they need to focus on better imagery stuff, right? By the time they had very crude ultrasound, and they didn't have enough ultrasound machines to show people, even. I mean, I look at those things, and I can't figure out anything. You know, now that has happened. It took a lot longer, but I said, that's going to be the key thing. That's what's going to change people's minds. Show them not just even a picture of a baby developing, but show them the baby that is in them, that is moving in them with a beating heart. And the better your imaging is, the fewer abortions I think you're going to have. Now, that is the ideal situation. And it is good to educate people that this is actually a baby that is that's actually a human that is developing that you don't want to kill. But I think the key thing, as I said before, is to show what an abortion does to a baby. Show the mutilated bodies. I know people don't want to see it. I don't like seeing it. But it's the uncomfortable truth. And it's that uncomfortable truth, and it's going to make the people who insist that they can kill babies anyway, it's going to make them hopping mad. And I'm fine with that. Go ahead. Get mad. Get mad. God's mad about this. And you need to understand that that wrath is going to be poured out on us. We need to be more concerned about God's wrath than we are about some Marxist is trying to impose some kind of censorship on us, trying to shame us into silence when we're showing the brutal truth. And so the brutal truth is also that nations that embrace abortion will inevitably support euthanasia. We're already seeing this now. We're seeing it in Canada. We're seeing it in the UK. As I mentioned last week, and there's a report on LifeSite News about this this week, I talked last week about a British member of parliament whose name is Matthew Paris, defending euthanasia and not only saying that it is the socially responsible thing to do if you don't have perfect life. There's something wrong with you. Your quality of life just isn't good enough. Well, it's a socially responsible thing to do. You should do it. You would be selfish not to die. And, you know, you are a burden on the country that is paying for your health care. You're a burden on your family. You have a duty to die. That was the Wall Street Journal op-ed piece that I read to you last week. And we see that as happening in Canada, in the UK, many other places. He's a former member of parliament talking about killing humans. Because once you cross the Rubicon that you can kill a human, this is they want people to imagine. They want to deceive women just like they deceive children about gender. They want to deceive women that this is not a child. Now, some people, even if they know that it's a child, they will still kill it. And you're never going to stop that. But they don't want people to know. And that's why you have to show that it is a child, and you have to show that abortion is murder. Carrie Lake is now coming out as pro-choice, embarrassed about the moral clarity of a law from 1864. Because, you know, she's a celebrity apprentice without any principles, one of Trump's girls. Fresh off of raising $1 million at Mar-a-Lago, she decides that she's going to chop up babies for her political advantage, which is exactly what she's calling for. Yeah, let's go ahead. I don't want to stand in the way of anybody committing murder here. These Republican MAGA politicians are becoming harder and harder to defend, says dissenter.com. Harder and harder to defend as the lesser of evils when it comes to moral issues. Oh, they're indefensible. So Carrie Lake recently released a video stating that she is pro-choice too. Let's not mince words. These politicians speak out of both sides of their mouths all the time. And unfortunately, the so-called conservatives are not immune to this wicked behavior. In this clip, Lake explains how she personally chose life, but doesn't believe that abortion should be banned. This is what the Democrats used to always say. As I've said, the Democrats of my youth, or the Republicans have become the Democrats of my youth, and the Democrats have become the Marxists of my youth. So it should be, shouldn't believe that abortion should be banned. Ripping babies apart, live, limb by limb, should not be banned. But every woman should be forced to make the same decision that she did. The clowns need to stop calling themselves pro-life, says a dissenter, because the very definition of pro-choice is believing that people should be able to choose whether or not they kill their child. But again, they're not pro-choice when it comes to your medication. We got this horrible pandemic. Yeah, so I've heard, but I haven't seen anybody sick. Oh, but you got to take this vaccine and no choices about it. Oh, and we're not going to let you try anything else. You can't try ivermectin or HCQ. Trump's not going to shut these people down who are punishing doctors and patients and pharmacists who are giving you this stuff. He's not going to do anything about that. You know, the politicians here in Tennessee did. They interposed. Trump wouldn't interpose. Trump could have very cheaply have provided ivermectin and HCQ, but instead he was providing the rigged tests, the COVID test, the PCR test. He was providing the vaccine. He was providing the cover for everything that they did. So dissenter said, I hope you're seeing where this mainstream pro-life movement and the incrementalist ideology have led this nation's collective morality. And Whitmer saying abortion is on the ballot in all 50 states and the Republicans are scared to death because they won't defend it. Bill Maher came out talking about abortion. As a matter of fact, he had a couple of people on his show, and one of them from the Financial Times in the UK, somebody who is actually the provost of King's College in Cambridge. Oh, wow. I'm so impressed. Are you? A financial columnist, Gillian Tett, said, it's odd that abortion is such a big political issue when there's so many other issues. And so Bill Maher said the quiet part out loud. He said, well, not if you believe it's murder. That's why I don't understand this 15-week thing. Or Trump's plan to leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left. And when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women. People who aren't pro-life, pro-choice, he says, they don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is, he said. It kind of is murder. And then he says, but I'm okay with that. I am, he said. He's okay with murder. He's okay. Bill Maher says, well, let's be honest about this. And he is. Yeah, it is murder. That's why these people are upset. They're not upset because they hate women. They're upset because they hate murdering little babies. And he says, but I'm okay with that. He says, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that, he said. Wow.
He said that that's a more noble position than most people take.
Yeah, yeah. Travis, if you didn't hear him, says really sad that that's a supposedly a noble position for him to take. Yeah, it's a candid position. Certainly isn't noble. But it is sad, isn't it? Man. Yeah. Piers Morgan was on the program. He said, well, I'm pro-choice. Are you? Were you pro-choice when it came to vaccines and masks and social distancing and ivermectin and all the rest of this? You weren't pro-choice. Don't tell us that. That really was our body. This is somebody else. And then she pushed back. This provost of King's College, Cambridge, pushed back and said, well, that's quite harsh, what he just said. Oh, she sounds like Donald Trump. Let me just say one thing here, though. I agree with him on this 15-week thing. I do not agree with him on the state thing, because, look, my position is, how do we save babies? My position is the same as the people who want to make it a federal law. We both want to try to save as many babies as possible. I'm just saying that by refederalizing it, you're going to wind up losing any restrictions on abortion. That's the way it's going to work. I've watched politics all my life. I've been deeply involved in this. And if you don't understand how this works, if you don't understand that's what's going to happen, it's going to wind up, Democrats are going to get control. They're going to remove all restrictions up to and beyond birth. That's what they want to do. And it'd be naive for you to take this back into Washington. First of all, it's unconstitutional to do so. The Supreme Court agrees with me finally. I've been saying that all of my life. And I'm telling you that from a pragmatic standpoint, what it'll do is it'll end all restrictions on children. You want to try to save as many as you can. You're not going to stop abortion in New York or California. You're not. They're too far gone. But you can stop abortions in Tennessee and Texas and Florida and places like that. You should work on that. Maybe eventually you'll change the minds of people in California and New York. But if you try to do this at the federal level, you're going to lose everybody. You're going to lose big time. It's beyond foolish to do that. And so, you know, when we look at people like Sean Hannity, he's just fine with doing the politically expedient thing, like Carrie Lake.
And the people on the left are so desperate, attacking Trump now for an Arizona Supreme Court ruling that upholds what is a Civil War era law banning abortion. This will be fixed in the next week or two. Let not your heart be troubled. I can pretty much assure that that will happen. Trump opposes the law and this ruling, or you can believe Joe's make pretend Donald Trump that doesn't exist. And you know what? Arizona's governor is a Democrat. The state's attorney general is a Democrat. The state legislature is almost evenly divided. If Democrats, you want to get rid of the law, well, you have a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you, get rid of it.
What a pathetic corruption we have seen from Sean Hannity over his life. Isn't that amazing? Did you ever think you would see something that far gone? I know he's always about money, but still. And then one last article, and this is also from Arizona. You got an Arizona Democrat praising Satanists, right? This is what we had in the Texas legislature when, you know, after the Gosnell trial, where you had him convicted for murdering two babies that were full term, essentially, and then causing the death of a woman who, by the way, was a woman of culture and, for extra bonus points, an illegal alien. And she bled to death, or I don't know what the complications were exactly, but she died because they couldn't get a gurney through his trashy facility. It was filthy, trashy, everything about it was a mess. And they couldn't get her out of there quickly enough, and she died. And so he was convicted of murder for that. And so they, in Texas and other states, they started putting in some restrictions for these abortion clinics, saying you got to have your building so that the ambulance drivers can get gurneys through there in case there's something that happens, and you have to have relationships, have some kind of relationship with a hospital so that you can move this stuff faster, and other restrictions that were put there. Well, that was just too much for liberals in Texas. And so they were holding their rallies in the state capitol, and, you know, when they had the pro-life people there and the abortionists there, and the abortionists started shouting, "Hail Satan." Well, here you have Arizona, and this is a Democrat. This guy is wearing a mask still. This just happened, and he goes in wearing a mask. Is he wearing a mask because he's that OCD about disease and sickness, or is he just ashamed? And so this is what he has to say.
Members, I would like to introduce a group of Arizonans, some from my district, but they have membership all across the state. They are here today to confront the arbitrary, tyrannical authority of religious persecution that's scheduled for government committee later on today. Today, members, I want to introduce you to members. We are graced with the presence of ministers and members of the Satanic Temple of Arizona. Please stand today. They're at the Capitol today to fight for the rights of their more than 12,000 members of their denomination and the rights of free speech and free exercise of all Arizonans. The temple practices non-theistic Satanism, divorced from superstition, without any belief in gods or devils. They practice the religious religious values.
You can't even read.
Of compassion, justice, bodily autonomy, free speech, science, humility, and noble action. As an organized
religion,
they actively do outreach, community service, and participate in public affairs where the issues might benefit from their rational satanic insights. The mission of the Satanic Temple is to encourage benevolence and empathy among all people. They embrace practical common sense and justice. They are guided by their conscience to undertake noble pursuits that fulfill their religious values, again, particularly of compassion and free speech. Members, I welcome them to the floor today. And we'll hear from them later on in government committee. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Says the guy who's wearing a mask because of his fear of death, or because he knows what he's doing and he's ashamed of it. Why is the reason that he's wearing a mask here? And of course, we know that the Satanic Temple is a grifting, self-promoting organization that is there not to support free speech and free inquiry, but to shut it down. These people are there for one purpose and one purpose only. That is to mock and to censor the free exercise of religion by Christians. And they don't believe any of this stuff, and they proudly tell you that they don't believe anything that they're telling you. In that regard, they are satanic, whether they realize it or not. Arizona Democrat State Senator, you just heard there was Juan Mendez, the guy who was saying tyrannical, they are tyrannical, satanic temple, the satanic temple. It's amazing how stupid these people are who God has punished this nation to have people like him in positions of leadership. So he proclaimed through a large white COVID mask that he and his colleagues were graced by the presence of ministers and members of the satanic temple, fighting back against these tyrannical Christians out there who have the Constitution on their side in terms of free exercise. Quite frankly, I would just suggest to him that based on what he's trying to accomplish here and based on his concerns, I really do think that a Ku Klux Klan mask would be better protection for you. It would also be better optics, because that's what you're really about. The Satanists were there to testify before a Senate government committee against a bill introduced by Senator Jake Hoffman. And I hate it when they do this. It's like the Patriot Act and stuff. He has the Respect Act. Reject escalating Satanism by preserving essential core traditions. Boy, I'd be real tempted to vote against that based on the name, but I agree with the principle. I hate those cutesy names like that. It would ban, quote, satanic memorials, statues, altars, or displays, or any other method of representing or honoring Satan from being erected on public property. All committee members present that day, except for Mendez, voted in favor of the bill, but it ultimately failed when two Republicans voted with Democrats against it. So it got out of committee, but they lost it in the House. Well, here's the thing. I think that the bill is flawed in the sense that it doesn't get to the core issue. What the Satanic Temple is trying to do is to try to destroy the aspect of the First Amendment that allows the free exercise of religion. Their purpose is to be obnoxious and to call their obnoxiousness a religious expression. And if they can get you to ban what they have absolutely no belief in, then they can argue that what you truly believe in your religion can be banned. That's the game that they're after. And so the bill ought to address any faux religion that professes that it doesn't believe what it's doing and is there specifically for the mockery. They ought to be very specific about it. That is the core issue here. And you can ban this without having any First Amendment conflicts, because this is not a religion. And we're not applying some litmus test to them. They profess it up front. The temple practices non-theistic Satanism divorced from superstition without belief in gods or devils, he says. They practice the religious values of compassion, justice, bodily autonomy, blah, blah, blah. No, those are not religious values. It is not a religion. It is not to be accorded respect. It is not to be accorded protection as a religion. And that's the point. It's not a religion. They engage in stunts. They erect statues of Baphomet on public property. They host after-school Satan classes to try to be as obnoxious as they can, because they want to shut down after-school Bible classes. So the Temple of Satan says it embraces Satan's name as a symbol of the eternal rebel in opposition to arbitrary authority. We do not promote a belief in a personal Satan. Satanists should actively work to hone critical thinking. Our beliefs must be malleable in the best current scientific understanding of the material world. Well, okay, if you want some critical thinking, take a look at Blaise Pascal's Wager. He says, what have you got to lose if there is a God and you obey him? If there is no God, what have you really lost? You may have given up some things that you would like to do, but if there really is a God, and you rebel against him, you have infinite loss. So Pascal, the mathematician, tried to explain to them what the risk benefits are. But we have a population that doesn't understand risks and benefits anymore, as evidenced by this COVID thing. The group simultaneously promotes ritual abortions and unbaptism ceremonies. Their core statements say they don't believe any of this stuff. It's just mockery. It is not a religion. It is not beliefs. It is mockery of religion and beliefs and of God. The senator promotes them as taking noble action and says that he is graced with their presence. Well, that's where we are. That's what is happening in America, which is why some of these other things are happening. We're going to talk about what Joe Biden is doing to us through his EPA, as well as another look back at the pandemic. It is amazing now. There's a documentary out saying that it wasn't Fauci. They've already excused Donald Trump. These are Trump people. And now they're saying it wasn't even Fauci. No, guess who it was? It was Birx, says this documentary. I'm going to cover that and show you some of the comments that people made with that. On Rockfin, thank you very much, Michelle Obama. And thank you very much. I really do appreciate your support. And you've been there almost every day. I appreciate that. And on Rockfin, Tornator, thank you as well. And he writes, or she writes, good morning, David. You may have already heard about it, but there's a new documentary coming out about the fake plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer. It's called Kidnap and Kill, and they have the preview posted on the website, kandkfilm.com. I thought you'd be interested. The film's creator is doing interviews. I'll take a look at it. And I'm assuming that they understand that it was a fake FBI setup. I'm assuming from that. We'll be right.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
American Family News, I'm Rusty Pugh. The international community is waiting for a potential Israeli response to Iranian airstrikes over the weekend. Trey Yinks reports from Tel Aviv.
We do know Israel's war cabinet wrapped up a three-hour meeting. They are set to meet again tomorrow, discussing options for a response against Iran. There are reportedly some disagreements in the cabinet about the scale, scope, and timing of such a response. But we do understand initial reporting in Israeli media indicates that Israel will strike back, looking to send a message to Iran that these types of attacks will never be accepted, but also trying to avoid a much broader regional conflict. We also were on a briefing today with a top Israeli Air Force official who praised U.S. Central Command, saying they played a critical role in the organization when it came to the defense over the weekend.
Two bodies were found in Oklahoma, believed to be connected to the disappearances of two mothers in the state. Public information manager at the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, Hunter McKee, gave an update on the investigation from Guyon, Oklahoma.
We identified that there were two bodies during our search. Both of those deceased persons have been transported to the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office, where they will do a proper identification and also look into a cause and manner of death.
The bodies were found in a rural part of Texas County. The last known information about the pair was that they were driving to pick up kids from a birthday party and their car was found abandoned near the Kansas border. So far, at least four people have been arrested and charged with first-degree murder and kidnapping. A conservative columnist is blasting CNN for continuing to call anyone who expresses the belief that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump a liar.
Recently, in her new capacity as co-chair of the Republican National Committee, Lara Trump sent out a robocall with the message that Democrats were guilty of massive fraud in the 2020 presidential election. The message said, quote, no photo IDs, unsecured ballot drop boxes, mass mailing of ballots and voter rolls, chock full of deceased people and non-citizens, are just a few examples of the massive fraud that took place. If Democrats have their way, your vote could be canceled out by someone who isn't even an American citizen. CNN immediately did what the mainstream media consistently does, claim the allegations were false, detailing what it called Lara Trump's extensive and recent history of supporting her father-in-law's electoral fraud lie. Robert Knight is a conservative activist and a columnist for the Washington Times.
CNN doesn't even mask its bias. It just calls Mr. Trump's view lies. And then castigates anybody who repeats them. And of course, these are not lies. These are documented instances. And I've documented many of them in my book, Crooked, what really happened in 2020 and how we can stop vote fraud.
Knight says Lara Trump just related what really occurred.
There's no question in many people's minds that the election was rigged, if not outright stolen. And all the left can do, and by the left, I include the media and especially CNN, is to pretend it didn't all happen and to call anybody who points it out a liar.
I'm Chad Groening.
Colleges and universities are starting to crack down on anti-Semitic protests and events on campus. But concerns remain for Jewish students in states such as California.
Dr. Zachary Marshall is editor of Campus Reform. He says Berkeley has been a hotspot in recent weeks.
We have seen in the last few weeks anti-Semitic crowds at Berkeley bang on doors and break windows because they want to storm a Jewish event on campus. The Jewish students had to be escorted out of the building through a secret tunnel because it was not safe for them to go out the main entrance, even if police were there. We've also seen University of Santa Barbara students at the Multicultural Center put up signs all over the building saying Jews not welcome here, stay out.
Marshall says media has lost interest in these things. One reason being anti-Semitic students are getting somewhat more clever about how to hide their identities and do things more covertly.
So it's not the big crowds and parades we saw last fall, but it's still a problem for Jewish students on campus.
I'm Chris Woodward.
More news available online at AFN.net and on the AFN mobile app. I'm Rusty Pugh.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
The book of Revelation says, "The spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ." This is at the very heart of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. In that spirit, we have created the Prophecy Reality News app for all of your mobile devices, streaming First Amendment Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available for your Apple, Android device, and smartphone, absolutely free. Get the Prophecy Reality News app installed today, so you can listen to First Amendment Radio wherever you are. The Prophecy Reality News app. Get it now.
Well, as we look at the Civil War, there we got another historical reference here. Michael Douglas is going to be playing Benjamin Franklin on TV. Unfortunately, he is no Benjamin Franklin, but he says playing a 70-year-old Benjamin Franklin on TV gives him hope about an 81-year-old Joe Biden. Well, Michael Douglas is not 81. Michael Douglas is 79. But Michael Douglas, you are not Ben Franklin and neither is Biden. And you're also, neither one of you are 70 years old. There's a big difference between 70 and 81. And of course, Biden is going to be 86 by the time he gets out, if he survives that long. Because he's past life expectancy and he's not looking anything at all like a Benjamin Franklin, neither of them, actually. Michael Douglas playing Ben Franklin when Franklin was 70 is giving him hope that Biden is not too old. A recent Quinnipiac poll found that 67% of voters believe that Biden is too old because, after all, he is 10 years older than Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin was not running for president. He was doing some diplomacy. The reality is that neither Michael Douglas nor especially Joe Biden were ever nearly as smart as Franklin. They started out way below where Franklin was in advanced age, and they have gone down downhill even further as well. But again, these guys are decade plus older than Franklin was. In other words, about 14% older. But they were never as smart. And Joe Biden, besides that, Benjamin Franklin always loved liberty in his country. Joe Biden has always hated liberty, hated individual rights. The whole concept of the Declaration of Independence was despised by Joe Biden. We saw that in the Clarence Thomas hearings. He hated the very idea of natural rights that were endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights. He hated that. He thought that was a disqualification for Clarence Thomas or having written about that. And of course, we now see that Joe Biden hates this country as much as he does our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and individual liberty. This is on Slate. Mark Joseph Stern. He says, I was skeptic of the Stormy Daniels prosecution, but I was wrong. This is the show trial that is going to begin today. It was interesting that we're all reminded about the O.J. Simpson trial and what a spectacle it was. This will not be as much of a spectacle because they've somewhat diminished it with ridiculous charges. You know, I mean, a murder charge is pretty serious. But these charges against Trump really aren't. Slate, however, has come around. He says, I was skeptic of this prosecution, but I was wrong. The prosecution of Trump is starting in New York today, he says, is on firm legal ground. Well, whether or not it is, here's a newsflash. Nobody cares. And we shouldn't care. Because we have seen so much lawfare, so much overcharging of all this stuff, so much political persecution, that they have completely discredited any real charges that might be there. And they have ignored the real charges that should be brought against Trump and Biden. Their betrayal of the Constitution, their mass murder programs, and all the rest of it. But people have already made up their mind about this. And so we're going to see the same kind of polarization that we saw with the O.J. Simpson trial. Decades later, you know, I still had people writing me about, you know, what they thought had happened. And we've got people who were involved, people who were witnesses. They disagree. Some of them think that it was O.J.'s son who did it. Others think it was the mafia who did it and all the rest of the stuff. Look, a hit with by O.J. Simpson using the mob doing this. Everybody's got their own ideas. We're not going to solve that. But everybody likes to look at that. But it also has no impact on us, like some of these things like 9/11 or like Dark Winter, or the anthrax attack, or other things. The O.J. Simpson trial was not used to push through a radical new legal approach and restructure our society like these other things that it is worth talking about in terms of a conspiracy. His case that he's laying out here for Trump is that although using Cohen to pay off his bimbo hookers was a misdemeanor, he said, because if it's used, if you commit a misdemeanor to further another crime, then it becomes a felony, he said. So he says, he allegedly directed his longtime fixer, Michael Cohen, to pay off Daniels through a shell company for her silence. Afterwards, Trump funneled $420,000 to Cohen in installments. But he allegedly concealed the payments by listing them as a legal expense for a retainer that did not exist. That is a misdemeanor. But a misdemeanor under New York law, but it is a felony when it's done with, quote, intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission thereof. And in his indictment, Bragg claims that Trump lied about the payments with the intent to violate election law, which is what elevates this crime to a felony. I think it is still very shaky legal ground, he says Bragg asserts that Trump and Cohen ran afoul of the Federal Election Campaign Act. Well, then that would be a federal issue. Why aren't the feds coming after him for that? By making unlawful campaign contributions in the form of a payoff at the direction of a candidate, Trump, Cohen has already pled guilty for this very act in federal court, so it's hardly a stretch to accuse Trump of intending to break the law by participating in the crime. That's, I think, the interesting thing about it. Michael Cohen has already pled guilty to this, and he's gone to jail for this. But the question is, can they tie this in and make that connection to turn it into a felony? Well, Governor Sununu from New Hampshire, who was the essence of establishment Republicans, went on ABC with Stephanopoulos, and they had a pretty heated back and forth. So he was asked by Stephanopoulos, Sununu was, if he would continue to support Trump, because now he supports Trump. He supported Nikki Haley, of course, when the primary was in New Hampshire, but now he supports Trump, of course, because he's a political opportunist who doesn't really care about anything other than that. But anyway, he was asked if he would still support Trump if he was convicted in this hush money case. And Sununu got it exactly right on this. I mean, he's looking at it, understands what the political calculations are. He said, this trial is not going to have a major political ramifications that a lot of people think it may have. When it comes to these issues, people see it more as reality TV at this point. And you could say that about the entire election, couldn't you? I mean, do you really think that Biden or Trump are going to change anything? Their professional tag team wrestling match, the people who run this country are not Trump and Biden. They let these guys do whatever they want, and they're selected for that purpose. But he says Trump will try to victimize it, and that has worked for him. And that's been going on for over a year, and his poll numbers never seem to go down because of that issue. Again, it only will work out to his advantage. He argued that the cases against Trump were not going to sway the American public and said it should be surprising that a Republican governor was endorsing the Republican nominee for president. Stephanopoulos says, but wait a second. Your words are very, very clear. On January 11th, 2021, you said his rhetoric and actions contributed to the insurrection. That's 5 days after January the 6th. No other president in history has contributed to an insurrection. Please explain, given the fact that you believe he contributed to an insurrection, how can you say we should have him back in the Oval Office, said Stephanopoulos. Well, Sununu was wrong, but he's not going to say he was wrong, calling it an insurrection. It was not an insurrection. It absolutely wasn't. The GOP governor said it was about less than Trump and more about support for the Republican administration. So instead of saying, well, I got it wrong, or it's not an insurrection, he kind of says, well, I don't really care about the insurrection. This is all about party politics and party loyalty. And, you know, I got to move my career forward here, which is what we see from most of these politicians. He says, I understand it doesn't make sense to you, George, but look at the polls, because you see, that's the only thing that matters. Look at the polls. Speaking of the polls, I thought it was very interesting that for the last couple of weeks, I commented to Karen. I said, you know, you go to the Drudge Report or you go to CNN or whatever and the different places that Drudge puts up, and it's like, oh, yeah, Biden is ahead and blah, blah, blah. And then you go to Breitbart or these other cheerleaders of Trump, and it's Trump is ahead, Trump is ahead. Well, we finally had a reconciliation of this. Finally this week, there were several articles, and Drudge put them up, saying, look at this, Biden's got the momentum. He's pulled within 1 point of Trump. In other words, they were lying about Biden being ahead all the time. You can play these kind of games with the polls. First of all, we are, we're what, 6 months away from the election, essentially? Anything can happen in 6 months. Polls at this stage are meaningless, even if they were honest, and they're not usually honest. They're usually rigged in some way or the other. I know they say they're scientific polls. How do you explain the radical differences between these different polls if they're also scientific? How do you explain the fact that they get it wrong so often? Well, they're not. They're not scientific. And they're not accurate. And we're 6 months out. But of course, they're also lying directly to you about all of this stuff as well. And putting happy spins on it. I mean, you can play games when you do the polls and say, well, we're only going to look at swing states. And who's ahead in the swing states? And you can do things like that. And they can all play their semantics. And they can talk about momentum or whatever and say, we're winning because momentum is on our side. Well, we're still behind, but, you know, that type of thing. But again, it's going to come down to Trump, who is, are they going to have a debate? Well, who knows? But, you know, Biden is going to play it safe. He's going to stick to the 20th century.
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century, 21st century.
This is our choice. So when we come back, we're going to talk about why local politics is important, as the EPA has decided that they're going to try to stop local production of meat. Yeah, that's right.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our Listen and Schedule pages on the Internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Well, as I've said before, we need somebody who's going to echo Cato from the Roman Senate, who said, after every speech, you say, oh, one more thing. Carthage must be destroyed. Well, I think we need somebody in Congress who's going to say after every speech, oh, and one more thing. The EPA must be destroyed. I know we've got a lot of agencies that fit that bill, but when you look at the EPA, they are laser focused on our food, our fuel, and so many other things. They are the bureaucracy that has been tasked with implementing the climate MacGuffin on us to take everything away from us. They're taking away our transportation. They're taking away our fuel. They're taking away our energy on the grid, as they tell everybody, well, you got to get everything hooked onto the grid. You know, your car, your range, your heating, your air conditioning. Oh, I'm sorry, we got to shut down the power plants now as well. And now they're coming after locally produced beef. And folks, forget about these clowns, Biden and Trump. You're going to stop these people at the local level if you're going to stop them. And that's what I want to talk about here with the climate stuff. This is an op-ed piece on Brownstone by Robert Malone. He says, the EPA is threatening locally produced beef. The EPA must be destroyed. And another blow to decentralize natural meat production, EPA rule indirectly shuts down small meat producers via overreach of the Clean Water Act. And of course, that is redundant. Clean Water Act is the ultimate in overreach. The Clean Water Act is the idea that any water anywhere is under federal jurisdiction. It doesn't have to be a river. It doesn't have to cross state lines. And we've seen this used against a family that had 8 acres, and they had created a pond in Montana, working class family, couple of kids. They used the pond as a swimming pool. They had one cow watered off of that, and it was completely contained. It was part of the site plans and everything, signed off by the local officials in accordance with local and state laws. And the EPA came in and tried to run up millions of dollars worth of fees against him. And he fought them for years. They even said at one point they tried to garnish his wages, and he had to fight them to keep them from garnishing his wages, acting as if they were the IRS or something. And so they have taken on, basically usurped all these other things that they have absolutely no authority for. But claiming that this isolated pond fell under the Clean Waters Act, the waters of the U.S. On January the 23rd this year, writes Robert Malone, under the Biden administration guidance, the EPA proposed a new rule that will bring 3,879 meat and poultry products processing facilities under their jurisdiction. This is a massive empire-building bureaucracy. And again, this type of thing has typically been under the jurisdiction of the USDA. You know, the FDA is out there with food additives and other things like that in terms of meat processing and stuff like that. It's usually the USDA. So, you know, probably the best hope that we've got of pushback against these people is that some of the bureaucrats at the USDA would say, wait a minute, now that's our little fiefdom there. You can't do that. So he said they put this rule out on January the 23rd. It was swiftly followed by an abbreviated comment period, which closed on March the 25th, 2024, and then immediate implementation of the rule change. All of this justified by wastewater levels of nitrogen and phosphorus coming from animal meat processing, mirroring the World Economic Forum's agenda to minimize nitrogen runoff, the same thing that has been the rationale for shutting down farms in the Netherlands, for example. So you didn't think that was going to come here? Well, yeah, and it's going to come through this out-of-control bureaucracy. And this is why I say that these so-called treaties, the Paris Climate Accord Treaty or the Pandemic Treaty or the new IHR, the new health regulations, international health regulations, all of that stuff, even though they don't follow the procedure to ratify a treaty, you don't even have to do that. They will use the bureaucracy to create rules for which you have no due process. It is regulation without representation. It is taxation without representation. It's going to be starvation without representation. That's what the EPA will bring to us. They write whatever they want. They've been given carte blanche, these unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats, to do whatever they wish. And they simply put up a comment period. That's it. That's supposed to be a check on what they do. That is not a check at all. They can completely ignore the comments, just as the EPA did. They can make the comment period very short, ignore all the comments, and that's exactly what they did in this particular case, as Robert Malone is pointing out. The new rule involves a major shift in the technology-based effluent limitations guidelines and standards for the meat and poultry industry, threatening their livelihoods by forcing them to add water filtration systems to their facilities. What does this mean to small meat processing facilities? It's been reported that the initial cost to install a water filtration system, bringing it into compliance, would be between $300,000 and $400,000, with a minimum of $100,000 annual maintenance. This would force many small meat processing facilities to shutter their doors. It is also a direct attack on the Buy Local Foods movement. If local meat producers no longer have a nearby facility to process meat, they will no longer be able to provide their product direct to the customer at food markets or online. And again, as we've seen, the moves by the USDA or by state departments of agriculture against Amos Miller and some other Amish farmers, they want to shut down local meat production. This is the way to do it in compliance with the global agenda being done by Washington bureaucracy. And how do we fight it? We have to fight it at the local level. And it can be fought at the local level because the EPA has no ability to enforce this. And they have no authority to create this rule in the first place. As a matter of fact, there is no authority in the Constitution for the EPA to even exist. It was an abomination created by Richard Nixon. And it has to be destroyed. It must be destroyed. You've had a weak counter effort by a couple of people in Congress that has absolutely no chance of passing. There isn't any support for people in Washington to ban the EPA. But we can effectively nullify it at the state and or local level. And we must do that. If you've got people who are on the ball at the state level, they can nullify rules from the ATF. They can nullify rules from the EPA. And we're not going to be able to ban these organizations, but we can keep them from doing any of this stuff if we have good people at the local level. Trump and Biden are a distraction. Neither one of them is going to do anything to check the EPA. They're not even going to talk about this. If they've got their debates, I can guarantee you up front, I know exactly what they're going to be talking about. It's the same thing they always are asked at these debates. And they'll just be recycling the same issues that they've been talking about for 30 or 40 years. They've got a couple of wedge issues that they'll talk about. They won't give you any hardcore statements of what they're going to do. And if they do, you can be guaranteed that they're not going to follow them once they get into office. The Kansas Natural Resource Coalition filed comments opposing the proposed rule and was joined by other county coalitions and by American Stewards of Liberty, KNRC, an organization of 30 Kansas counties, states these proposed rules will regulate indirect discharge facilities that departs from constitutional and statutory authority. Well, again, the EPA was a departure from constitutional and statutory authority, and it will significantly alter the balance between state and federal powers. They also state the proposal, quote, gives priority to environmental justice goals. They're continuing to make this lawfare. They're continuing to focus on the climate stuff as a human rights type of issue. We're seeing that type of legislation. We saw it in Switzerland, for example. That's the strategy. It's always global in its, or you know, the strategy that they come up with and use in Switzerland, which worked in Switzerland. You can be certain that they're going to try that here, and that it will work in places like California and New York and places like that. And that was where you had the group of 70-year-old women who said that, you know, pollution was affecting their quality or longevity of life or some kind of nonsense like that. And so they'll use the courts in any way that they can. They'll use any tactic that they can to try to impose this on people. So they also state that the proposal gives priority to environmental justice. The EPA jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act is not based on ecological importance or on environmental justice. So your Clean Water Act is not about that at all. And of course, they're the same people who polluted several rivers with their accidents, trying to clean up a mine, they said, demonstrating that the comment period was mere window dressing to meet formal federal comment requirements. Immediately on March the 25th, the EPA jammed through a finalized version of its devastating act, that addition to the Clean Water Act. They called it Effluent Limitations, Guidelines, and Standards for the Meat and Poultry Products Point Source Category. Well, it is effluence, isn't it? It's pure Bolshevik. Clearly, this is another case of aggressive, arbitrary, and capricious EPA regulatory overreach, writes Robert Malone. It is directly analogous to the recent Supreme Court case, West Virginia versus the EPA, a landmark decision of the Supreme Court relating to the Clean Air Act, and the extent to which the EPA can regulate carbon dioxide emissions related to climate change. According to the EPA, after months of study and testing to look for bacteria, viruses, etc., what they actually found in the wastewater of processing facilities was nitrogen and phosphorus, two of the fundamental elements which all living things are composed of. Carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus. When you talk, as these people have been talking about most of my life, about banning carbon and this kind of stuff, it is absolute absurdity. And if you accept what they're doing, a lot of people will accept it and argue it. Well, this process generates less carbon dioxide than you really think, or whatever. If you go down that path, you are playing their game, and they're trying to ban natural. It's like saying we've got to ban water, and now I have carte blanche to do anything necessary to ban water or water vapor, because, you know, water vapor is far more of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is only 0.04%. And if you look at the man-made carbon dioxide, oh, it's much smaller. And if you look at man-made carbon dioxide based on transportation, well, that comes at 2.5 times 1/10,000th of a percent. 2.5 1/10,000th of a percent. The EPA has decided that the entire meat industry, from slaughtering beef to poultry, marinas to packaging, must now retrofit current facilities and lagoons, and biomass dissipates to turn nutrients into CO2 and methane in order to prevent these pollutants from entering local water supplies. So now they want CO2 and methane. Now CO2 and methane are not as dangerous as nitrogen because they got to starve us. The EPA anticipates these new rules will at least result in the closure of 16 processing facilities across the country at a time when our country's meat producers are already struggling. However, on the high side, the EPA itself estimates that this might have an impact range of closing up to 845 processing facilities. So is it 16 or is it 845? Do they care? Yeah, they do. Actually, I think they want the 845 to shut down. These people are at war with us. They have been imposing sanctions, which is an act of war, since Trump and his orders in 2020. And it's only getting worse. Now, we've got all kinds of sanctions on everything about our life, our energy use, our transportation, our food, everything is being sanctioned by these people. And at some point, we've got to push back against our enemies domestic. Peacefully, that would be nullification. It would be done at the local and the state level. And we need to try to do that before we do anything else, for sure. We don't want to have a war. But these people are at war with us. They want to destroy everything we have. They want to starve us. They want to kill us. That's what the injections are about. They're not sugar water. It's suicidal injections. It's national suicide. What these people are all doing, they're all on the same page. And they're all trying to kill their own people. It's not democracy, it's democide. Far-reaching impacts up and down the supply chain from the consumer prices to producer losses. And again, it all began with Richard Nixon creating the EPA. Unconstitutionally. It truly is amazing. On Rockfin, a Syrian girl, she says the MAGAs refuse to see the destruction that Trump has in mind or has perpetrated through the scamdemic. Yeah, I agree. Rockfin, Wes Robertson, Trump and everything around him is just one big distraction, misdirection, gaslighting, et cetera, one huge psyop. Yep. And they're going to be reveling in that. We're going to have another OJ trial. Maybe he could pull up in a white Ford Bronco, get a vintage 1997. Jason Barker, good to see you, Jason. This is all about consolidating all the food supply so they can inject mRNA into it. They're testing poultry and beef mRNA shots and already have the pork ones. I agree. And, you know, we just had this law that was passed here, and you had the left, look at these crazy conspiracy theorists in Tennessee saying that if you genetically modify fruits and vegetables to have mRNA in them, we're going to consider that to be a pharmaceutical and regulate it accordingly. And they'll go, "Ooh, what are you talking about?" And it's like, well, here's the studies where these people say they're already doing it. They want to put it on everything. Again, it is mass culling of the population. Yeah, they want to make us, they want to impoverish us. They want to enslave us. But more than anything, they want to kill us. There's no doubt about it. On Rockfin, Dougalug, thank you very much for the tip. Thank you, David and the crew. Excellent program today. Well, thank you. On Rumble, Junk Silver, the EPA is Richard Nixon's enduring FU to all of us. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Yeah, it's always bothered me about Roger Stone. He's got a Nixon tattoo on his back, but I never said it to Roger. But I said, well, of course, he was a backstabbing politician. That is appropriate memorial to him. But I can think of many backstabbing politicians besides Richard Nixon. So I guess we should get all of their tattoos of their faces all over our backs just to remember how these guys have stabbed us repeatedly. Facilities can bypass these new regulations by drastically reducing their weekly annual pounds process. See, there you go. There's your out. Just start scaling it down. We can make meat rare. Yeah. How do you like your beef? I like it rare. As in never available and expensive. That's the key, right? You do it. How do you do it? You do it from the inside. You do it with disruption and you do it iteratively, right? That's what they would like to do. They would like to, okay, should we shut you down right away? If they shut down everything, people might start to wake up. So here's what we'll do. Right now, just reduce the amount of processing that you're doing. And all of a sudden people say, why is meat getting so expensive? And chicken and pork and everything that we eat. Why is it getting so expensive? They don't know that these people are having to cut down their production to even stay in business a little bit. And then they'll keep ratcheting that down until they just they disappear. It'll be done iteratively from the inside with disruption. The rule change fails to provide clarity of funding to local water treatment facilities. Here's the other thing, too. It's such a phony thing. The EPA fighting to cover up what some scientists within the EPA know about fluoride. Fighting to cover that up, keep that hidden. They're dumping poison and have been dumping poison into the water supply, calling it medication. If it was helpful, it's not helpful if you dump it into the water. You have no way to control the dosage, so you're going to have some people getting too much overdosing, and you're going to have other people getting too little, assuming that it is really a medication. None of it makes any sense. So while they're fighting to continue to dump industrial waste into our water, they're trying to use the Clean Water Act as a means to shut down our meat. The federal government is our enemy. The rules fail to account for foreign inputs. The rules specify 17 species of endangered animals that may be affected by salt residue as these salts flow downstream from processing facilities. This is bogus language to attempt to establish jurisdictional standing. Like I said, they even came after this family that had a small pond on 8 acres of land, and it wasn't connected to anything else. They even tried to impose it on that. So the rules do not differentiate between facilities that are near navigable waters or facilities that have private water rights. So in Congress, what are they doing? Well, two congressmen, Estes and Burleson, have proposed the Beef Act. And I'm sure that that stands for some silly, you know, phrase or something. Here it is. Beef. Banning EPA's encroachment on facilities. Yeah, I've got a beef with what they do. I've got a beef with their very existence. But look, just get rid of that encroachment on facilities. Just make it the Banning the EPA Act. Let's make this a little bit more direct. Whereas under the 10th Amendment, no powers are delegated to the federal government to protect our environment. And whereas any environmental protection is best done by the people who live there, we therefore hold that the EPA is unconstitutional and terminate it immediately, especially considering that it is experimented, violated the Nuremberg things back in 2012. It was looking for people who had respiratory issues, putting them on diesel, fine particulate matter that was 72 times more dense than what they said would harm people. Anyway, this legislation currently has a 1% chance of being enacted and only a 4% chance of passing out of the House Committee on Transportation. Why is that in the House Committee on Transportation? Why isn't it on food? This is the House where the GOP has a majority. Meanwhile, you have Biden punishing drillers and consumers. Let's just talk about it that way, because that's where it's ultimately going to go. Zero Hedge article points out it will be a 15-fold increase in permitting costs and plans to block Arctic oil extraction. So, depending on which way the wind is blowing and who's doing the reporting this week, Biden is for oil extraction out of the Arctic or he is against it. 1 week after the Biden administration slapped new regulations on key power grid components, the Washington Post reports that U.S. oil and gas companies will face a 15-fold increase in costs to drill on federal land under a new rule released on Friday. Under it, the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management, it's the BLM, same people there, the Mundy Ranch. And I saw an article, a Drudge Report, saying, it was a decade ago And the Bundys are still grazing their cattle there? Yeah. See, you can stand together and you can fight the system. Think about that. You know, look at, they've really come after the Bundys, especially Ammon. They've tried to lock them up. They have locked them up. They tortured him when he was in jail. But if you stand firm, you can fight these people. And they had a lot of people who stood with them. And 10 years later, they're still grazing their cattle. And boy, you talk about grazing. I don't know how these cattle find anything to eat out there in that desert. It truly is amazing. But as they were saying, oh, well, we got to shut all this down to protect the desert tortoise. The desert tortoise, studies showed, actually thrived with cattle there. The cattle droppings, you know, the Bolsheviks that they're dropping as they feed there, that had enough moisture, and the tortoise could actually feed off of that stuff. And gave them another moisture reservoir, not to mention the fact that the ranchers that were there, the Bundys, had put up watering troughs and things like that for the cattle, which helped to get that moisture out there. But they had more desert tortoise with the cattle than they did before there were cattle there. Anyway, the BLM will now require drillers to pay $150,000 per lease on federal lands, up from $10,000. From $10,000 to $150,000. And the first comprehensive update to the federal oil and gas leasing program in over three decades. Fossil fuel companies will also be required to pay higher royalties to the government on oil and gas extracted from federal lands. So, again, it's Biden essentially throttling things down. Now, one more example of how we stop things at the local level. Two bills equal double trouble for autonomous trucking. This is from FreightWaves. Now, we talk about autonomous trucking. What we're talking about is taking really big vehicles, you know, like 18-wheelers, weigh 80,000 pounds, and taking the driver away from the behind the steering wheel. What could possibly go wrong with that? We've got this mastered, don't we? I mean, it's great to see all these Cruise and Tesla cars that can navigate their way around traffic in the city and clog everything up and become such a pariah to the people that they're putting cones on the cars to keep them frozen in place because they're getting in the way, creating gridlock and all the rest of it. They're not even close to having this solved. And for all the people who say, well, yeah, but navigating inside of a city, that's a lot harder than navigating out on the highway. Is it? What are the consequences when this thing is out of control with an 80,000-pound semi-trailer? How easy is it to recover one of those things? How easy is it to stop them? Right? The brakes don't work as well as they do on cars. They got a lot more mass, a lot more inertia there. You remember... one of these that was in a test, and they had human drivers in there, and then they'd flip the switch and turn it over to the autonomous driver. And in one of these incidents, they had switched off the autonomous driver when they were got off the interstate, and they were getting ready to park it. And then they get back on the interstate, and it's like, all right, let's put the autonomous thing back on because it's simpler now. We're going 70 miles an hour with an 80,000 pound load, but let's just calculate the mass and the inertia. But anyway, they flip it back on and it immediately did a hard left turn. Why? Well, because the point where they were flipping it off, they turned it off, it was about to do a hard left turn. And when it came back on, it remembered the state of where it was, and it immediately starts to execute that turn and takes it across the median. Fortunately, nobody was killed. But if you want to put these things on the highway, run them up to 70 miles an hour, any error is going to be catastrophic. Truly is. Anyway, so how do you stop this stuff? Well, in California, there is some pushback from the Democrats about this. They have kind of shied back from giving autonomous control to these massive trucks. And so California Senate bill would require community by community okay for the driverless trucks. Advocates call this a de facto ban. Let me just say this. You don't need to have the state legislature help you with this. As we've seen over and over again, whether you're talking about some of the negative aspects of some corrupt areas that might have a a speed trap or something, you know, a little area where they hire a bunch of cops and everybody that comes by gets a ticket type of thing. We've seen that happen, pop up in Texas over and over again. And but you can do essentially the same thing to shut down these autonomous trucks, and it should be done for safety. If they care anything at all about safety, they ought to shut this thing down. Don't talk to me about all the petty regulations that they write tickets for with automobiles if they're going to allow these trucks to be under computer control and drive at that. So this is something, another one of these things that could be shut down and nullified at the local level, and it doesn't even have to have the permission of the state legislature, but the state legislature is lining up to try to do that in California. Again, when we look at the tactics that they're using, they're constantly using the bureaucracy to push this stuff through without any accountability. What the EPA is doing, you should be as concerned about that as what is happening with the WHO, because it's essentially the World Economic Forum's agenda. And they found their strategy for how they're going to try to impose the World Economic Forum agenda that we see in action in the Netherlands to shut down farmers, to shut down meat and pork and poultry and all the rest of it. That is now what they're doing in the Biden administration with EPA. In Germany, when we get to the cars, Germany electric car sales are plummeting, 30% down. And the response now is that Germany decides that maybe what they need to do is to ban driving on the weekend. So you use this little shiny metal boxes as contestants in a suicidal race, as the police said. And that's all. That's all you use it for. You just use it for your commuting. But no fun allowed. And so we're going to just shut it down. If you don't like the electric cars, we're not going to let you drive except on weekends. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the pandemic. Stay with us.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Secrets of the Rapture. Is there a 500-year-old conspiracy? A propaganda machine so pervasive and entrenched, yet so elusive that the entire world could be taken in by it, working in plain sight, but unseen by the world for what it truly is? If prophecy is God-given history in advance, why does the prophecy that has conquered the age also exclude nearly 2,000 years of history? What is it that they are afraid that the light of history will reveal? To understand our place in time and prophecy, we must look in history for an interpretation, that which stands the test of time, that which agrees with the Word of God, and history has proven to be true. When cunning fables and fearful speculations are removed from our sight, then we may clearly see what is truly expressed in Bible prophecy, both that which has been fulfilled and that which has yet to come. God's express word is the sword that must be wielded to remove the scales from the eyes and dispel the darkness of deceitful conjecture. Secrets of the Rapture was written to expose that which the spirit of the age has conjured out of the darkness to blind the eyes of the church in the world today. Secrets of the Rapture, Deconstructing Pre-Tribulation Dispensational Futurism, by yours truly, Nicholas Arthur, is now available at Lulu.com and Amazon. Secrets of the Rapture.
Well, in another article that shows how we can take action at the local level, how an individual can take on the World Health Organization, this is in Finland. The World Health Organization's Dr. Hanna Nyynek, I guess is the way you pronounce it, testified in court that she advised her government that vaccine passports were not needed, but she was ignored. Despite explaining that the COVID vaccines did not stop virus transmission and that the passports gave a false sense of security. Now, what is happening here is that one citizen, a Finnish citizen, Mika Valkala, is suing after he was denied entry to a cafe for not having a vaccine passport. Now, it turns out that Dr. Hanna, whatever her last name is, is chief physician at the Finnish Institute for Health and Welfare. But she serves as the WHO's chair of strategic group of experts on immunization. So that's the connection. She is a Finnish public health bureaucrat, but she also has a high position at the WHO. And this one guy who was kicked out of a restaurant is suing her. And as part of the deposition, the truth of the fraud of the pandemic comes out. That is key. So, again, stunning revelations in a Helsinki courtroom. Never give up on the idea that one of us can bring these people to account and can expose this stuff when you get discovery in a lawsuit. She testified and said she stated that the Finnish Institute for Health knew by the summer of 2021 that the COVID-19 vaccines did not stop virus transmission. During that same 2021 time period, the WHO said it was working to create an international trusted framework for safe travel, while EU members states began rolling out COVID passports. Now, where did all this stuff come from? You've heard the commercial that I've done about the common man, right? The World Economic Forum came up with the common pass. And it was their template that we saw being enacted everywhere. You know, it's nothing complicated. And everybody reproduced it and they created their own. The EU created their own. Some countries did their own. I don't know if anybody used the World Economic Forum's common pass. But the whole idea was that they would have their tentacles down to the local level. They would have somebody that they trusted at the local level that you would have to go to, and they would give you the shot, and then they would report it. And this trusted vaccinator would then put it into the system, and it would percolate its way back up to a globally centralized database that all nations could access to control all global transportation. And that is essentially what all these different people have done with the EU and all the rest of them. And so this is the so-called international trusted framework. But it begins with somebody that they trust at the local level, right? So this Finnish doctor who's the public health bureaucrat there in Finland, as well as a WHO flunky, testified that her institute advised the Finnish government in late 2021 that COVID passports no longer made any sense, yet the certificates continued to be required. So they knew by summer that it wasn't doing anything in terms of immunity, and then continued to advise them, and still by late 2021 said it doesn't make any sense, but they continued to do so. Her admission that the government ignored scientific advice to terminate the vaccine passports proved shocking, as she is widely embraced in global medical circles. Besides chairing the WHO's Strategic Advisory Group on Immunizations, she is also one of Finland's top vaccine advisors and serves on the boards of Vaccines Together and the International Vaccine Institute. The EU's digital COVID certification helped to establish the WHO's Global Digital Health Certification Network in July of 2023. One EU official said, by using European best practices, we contribute to digital health standards and interoperability globally to the benefit of those most in need. So that's the key thing. That's the key phrase, interoperability. which is the same thing that they're doing with CBDC. Because again, both CBDC and the vaccine passport are a form of global digital ID. And it is this interoperability where they connect everybody, all the different nations, which will continue to exist to as a means of deception, so that you don't really understand that we're under global governance. It'll continue to exist. It'll give people a sense of continuity. You can still wave your flag and sing your national anthem and feel good about your country, but it'll be global governance as we've already got now. And this interoperability will allow them to interchange the information as and essentially create a network of global control. So the person who pushed back against this, the Finnish citizen, created a website discussing his case against Finland's government, where he writes that he launched his lawsuit, quote, to defend basic rights, unquote, after he was denied breakfast in December of 2021 at a Helsinki cafe because he did not have a COVID passport, even though he was healthy. He said the Constitution of Finland guarantees that any citizen should not be discriminated against based on health conditions, among other things, he says on his site. And of course, that was what Western civilization was about. We got great documents out there. It's just that now we're ruled by people who absolutely hate the foundations of Western civilization. They hate our constitutions, and they want to rule as tyrants. On Rumble, Junk Silver says the only way self-driving vehicles can be safe is if they're the only thing on the road, and I believe that's the plan. I agree as well, yeah. And to completely control everything about it, and as we've talked about this years past with Eric Peters, to make sure not only are they the only thing on the road, but just like with a plane or something, you're going to space them out and make sure there's nothing else close to them. You're going to have kind of air traffic control or something to keep them far away from each other as well. So this lawsuit continued today in Helsinki District Court, where British cardiologist Asim Malhotra will testify that during the COVID pandemic, some authorities and medical professionals supported unethical, coercive, and misinformed policies such as vaccine mandates and vaccine passports. He said it undermined informed patient consent and evidence-based medical practice. And of course, we have seen this from the very beginning. Mystery as more Fauci emails surface and raise questions about his links to the COVID lab leak. After he was accused of secretly conspiring with the CIA. Anything but don't blame Trump. The good news is that Trump, even though he was totally owned and deceived by everybody in his administration, is now going to fix everything. Colleges are backtracking as the COVID vaccine mandate lawsuits proceed at the Supreme Court. And as I played for you earlier, Trump said not a penny to these colleges, right?
Not give one penny.
Yeah, he knows
that has a vaccine mandate or a mask mandate.
He knows how to control people. He knows how to get them to do what he wants, right? It is always about the carrot or the stick. It is always about the bribe or the blackmail. Whether you're talking about a president or you're talking about a governor, that's how they get the people underneath them to do whatever they want. They don't have to worry about the 10th Amendment or whether they have the legal authority. They just bribe people. Here's some fiat cash. It's orders and money, right? Fiat cash, Federal Reserve. I've got unlimited amounts of fiat paper. And so the fiat is an order, and here's your cash money. That's the way this works. So a lawsuit by an independent presidential candidate, RFK Jr., and his children's health defense seems destined for the Supreme Court to determine whether Rutgers suspending the mandate as an April 1st system-wide email announced is enough to end this litigation. So Rutgers is being sued. They have backed off. RFK Jr. is a part of that suit. Trump sees it. So now he starts talking about, that's what I'm going to do. But of course, it always was about the money. That's how he controlled all the people underneath him. The vaccine expert from the Children's Health Organization reportedly undermining its posture in a lawsuit against Finland's one-time COVID pass is happening at the same time, as I reported earlier. It's not just this, but it's also what is being exposed and Finland. On Rumble, Mark M228, during April 2020, Trump stood there like a pathetic weakling. He looked like a cartoon dog that said, which way did he go? Which way to go, George? Which way to go? Absolutely right. And then he threw out the HCQ and ivermectin, and then Fauci, oh, that's a guy who doesn't know anything, and he sheepishly backed down. He just did that so that he could discredit it. Because if he was serious about it, he could have put in some orders to protect people. That's, like I said, that's what they did here in Tennessee. If somebody's got an ivermectin prescription, you're supposed to fill it and not be punished. They put that in law. Why couldn't Trump do that? Well, he could. He could have done that. And he could have manufactured vast quantities of these cheap drugs and put them out there. Instead, what he did was he sheepishly and comically discredited them. He was the comedian to Fauci's straight man. On Rockfin, Wes Robertson, Trump surrounded himself with a so-called deep state. Everyone from Rothschild and Goldman Sachs bankers to government mules to military-industrial complex psychos. Absolutely right. I mean, you look at his administration. It was pathetic. Well, this I thought was interesting. This is from Michael Brown, who writes on WorldNet Daily and several other sites. He has a regular column. And he is a pastor. And I thought it was interesting when he said five reasons that Donald Trump is so hated. Well, you know, I can think of a few which are not in here. And I'll show you the ones that I think are really key. I went back and I found some things I'd taken screenshots of back in the summer of 2020. This one, for example, the pandemic swimming pool. And you got a mom there, and she's fawning over this little girl who is on the side. And that little girl is labeled as massive corporations, and the fawning mother is labeled as the U.S. government or Donald Trump, really. And then you got small business, which is a little kid in the foreground who is struggling to keep his head above water, drowning. And then down at the bottom is a skeleton sitting underwater in a chair underwater, a skeleton. Labeled the working class. Boy, that pretty much is the pandemic swimming pool. Massive corporations pampered by the government, small businesses struggling to stay above water, and the working class dead underwater. And quite frankly, folks, that's exactly what we saw from Trump's income tax changes that he put in before the pandemic. It was consistent. What was done during the pandemic was consistent with his tax reforms, quote unquote, same type of thing. And then this also during the summer, this from the Australian, paying for a, and this was also, I think, from August of 2020, paying for an epidemic of stupidity. We have handed control of our lives to a clown car packed with idiots who have wasted billions, or in our case in America, trillions, trying to defeat this virus, and they will never admit that it was all for nothing. And again, the conservatives won't either. They'll cover for Trump. They'll even cover for Fauci. They'll come after Burks. They'll come after Pence or whoever it is that they don't like. They'll make a case that it was all that person. Folks, it was all of them. It was Trump and it was Biden. It was Trump and it was Pence. It was Trump and the Republicans and the Republicans and the Democrats. It was all of them. And that's why they're not doing any accountability of them. No investigations, no inquiries, no accountability for anything. Because it was all of them. As I've said before, it's like an Agatha Christie novel. Murder on the Orient Express, except this is Murder on the Warp Speed Express. So Michael Brown, five reasons that Donald Trump is so hated. I hate him because of the stupidity. I hate him because of the evil. I hate him because of the murder that he did. You know, what he did to our society, our rule of law and everything else, and the massive number of people that were murdered with what Alex Jones calls sugar water. But he says, why is he so hated? And by that, he means hated personally. Well, he says the first and most obvious reason that Trump is reaping what he has sown. He has sown hatred, and he is reaping hatred. He has been nasty and cruel and crude and vicious, and his detractors are responding in kind, giving him some of his own medicine. That's right. That's good. Yeah, he is reaping what he has sown. He has sown hatred and division, and that's exactly what he's getting back. He said this should occasion no surprise, even to his most dedicated followers. He punches his opponents in the face, metaphorically speaking, and they punch back. Would a more fitting metaphor be that he hits below the belt? Well, yeah. There is no fair play. The gloves are off. As a matter of fact, you know, when you look at this, for the people that he praises and then hires, you know, he would go out and he hire these people. He would effusively praise them. I've played the clips. You know, here's Trump when he hires person X. And here's what Trump says about that person when he fires. That's such a loser. It's this person, that this guy or this woman, oh, such losers. And he just hectors them as he's firing them. You know, it's the hatred, the viciousness with which he attacks anybody. He can't just say, well, I've, you know, give the reason that people offer their resignations is, you know, they know that they're being fired, but you give them the grace to say, well, you, here, I voluntarily resign. Give me your letter of resignation so that I'm not publicly humiliating you. A little way to pull this back and give you some plausible deniability that you wanted to go. This is a mutual decision or something like that. But he didn't do that. We've never seen anybody act that way publicly, a CEO or certainly not a president. And so he's reaping what he sowed. Second, he said Trump was hardly seen as a model of Christian virtue and humility in his pre-presidential days. Instead, he was known as a proud womanizer. Well, I would say that's putting it mildly as well. He was known as a Jeffrey Epstein pal. You know, the two of them in the 90s were inseparable, doing the same stuff. Bill Clinton as well. You know, the three amigos or whatever. He was a man who made money on strip club casinos, not to mention being thrice married himself. Narcissist was his middle name. That's why his critics have wondered aloud at the widespread support that he's received from Christian conservatives, in particular evangelicals. Those of us who did vote for him, he said, should have a ready response. To our knowledge, his immoral days were in his past. You have no reason to say that. None whatsoever. I mean, as we'll see with this trial that begins today, in his past, I don't think so. Anyway, he says Trump was and is a better choice than Biden or Hillary Clinton. No, I say that, and I said this in 2020. I said Hillary could never have gotten away with what she did, and I said, and it's going to be harder for Biden to get away with forcing the vaccine on people than it would be for Trump, because you're going to have these conservative suckerfish like Alex Jones telling you it's all for your good. He's doing it to help you. He's playing 4D chess. He really understands what all these people in the deep state are doing, and he's outsmarting them. So I said, it's better to have somebody coming at you wearing a uniform, saying they're going to kill you or take your meat away from you, your car away from you, your energy away from you, all this stuff. It's better to have them coming at than to have somebody pretend to be behind you so they can stab you in the back. And that's what Trump is. I've said the difference between Trump and Biden is the fact that Biden makes it very clear that he's an enemy combatant. He wears the uniform, he flies the flag, whereas Trump is the fifth column. Trump is a person who pretends to be the anti-globalist, who actually is enacting the globalist agenda with the help of the conservative press and GOP politicians who are so afraid to criticize him that they cover for him. Question, if Donald Trump were a far-left Democrat running against a God-fearing, highly moral Republican, how would we feel about Trump? Yeah, how would you feel if he was in the other party? Because he is in the other party. Put another way, if Trump were the enemy rather than the ally, would we excuse the sordid nature of his past and overlook the unsavory aspects of his character today? Wouldn't we say, we don't want a man like that in the White House? Well, of course, we already did. This is not a hypothetical. That's what happened with Bill Clinton. And I still remember in the 90s and even a decade later having conversations with people, friends who were leftist Democrats who were so angry that Republicans wanted Bill Clinton impeached. They would make any kind of an excuse for his sexual assault, his rape, his corruption. And of course, Ken Starr did as well. And Ken Starr was one of the counsel legal defenders of Jeffrey Epstein. And Ken Starr also defended credible sexual assault allegations against the football team at Baylor when he was president of Baylor. Three strikes and you're out, Ken. actually out with the first strike. But you look at this, and I remember in the 90s and early 2000s, how in the world can the left defend Bill Clinton over this stuff? That's pathetic. And yet we've seen exactly the same thing from the conservatives now. It's the partisan Democrats and the partisan Republicans who will defend any kind of behavior of their guy because their party is their religion. They don't have any principles. They simply are playing 4D chess to win. It is situational ethics, if they have any ethics at all. The means justifies the end, and the end means that I get to wear the crown and sit on the Game of Thrones seat. Third, Trump is deeply hated because his opponents believe the very worst things about him. It is pretty believable. Fourth, Trump is a threat to the establishment and to the political and social status quo. That's no different from any other politician. And you see these people come after each other pretty hard. It's just that he gives them more ammunition, and he's reaping what he has sown. Fifth, Trump has identified publicly with Christian conservatives. And this is one of the reasons why I truly despise him. Because of that, I'm endorsed by Jesus attitude that's being sold by people like Roger Stone. If you are pro-abortion, he is the enemy. If you sympathize with transitioning children, he is the enemy. No, he's not. He was pushing the transgender stuff before it was, and so was Flynn, before anybody was even on the radar of most normal people. If you don't like the Bible, which Trump freely waves and endorses, he is the enemy. It's too bad that he doesn't oppose abortion. It's too bad that he doesn't oppose the trans stuff. It's too bad that he exploits Jesus and is a reproach to Christ. And it's too bad that these Christians love politics and Trump so much that they themselves become a reproach to Christ. But he finishes up with this. He says, that's why it's so important that if we do choose to vote for Trump, as I have said time and again, that we make that a secondary matter, lest we tarnish the name of the Savior we love. In other words, to the extent that we preach Trump rather than just vote for Trump, we defile our witness. Well, that is absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to read this. These people have made an idol out of Trump.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Well, on Rumble, Junk Silver says, very few of the Trump supporters who say he was deceived took the jab. I often ask them why they weren't deceived, too. And I have seen a lot of them, like Tim Pool. I am so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about the jab before. That was 4 years ago. Okay, so 4 years ago, Trump did a thing, said Tim Pool. And he goes, and you know what? You took the jab. It's your fault. And I've seen the same thing from, what is that guy that writes on WND? I can't remember his name now, but the commentator that is there said the same thing. Well, you took the jab, your fault's on you. That's the same kind of ethic that I've talked about in that movie that you had a actress who put poison in some milk and put it in front of a basset hound. And she said, well, that's poison. If I were you, I wouldn't drink that. But it's completely up to you. Do you want to drink it? You know, and you're sitting there watching this beautiful basset hound, and it's like, oh, no, I can't believe it. That's the kind of pathological thing. And it was a movie called Montenegro. I do not recommend it. But that scene has always stuck with me. And every time somebody says, well, it's your fault. I didn't take it. I was smart enough to see through that stuff and support Trump, who was telling everybody to take it, who was telling everybody it was the elixir of life. This is your magic live forever pill or injection. Come on, take it. Look at all the people I've saved. You talk about something that is satanic. That's one of the most satanic things I've ever seen anybody do. And he's still doing it, and they still excuse it. And it's your fault if you took it. Shame on you. You're stupid. I'm smart. I support Trump. Yeah. On Rumble, Christian constitutional conservative says millions of Americans will never recover financially from what Trump did, followed up by Biden. Salaries will never rise at the same pace as this inflation, which will never end. That's right. As David Stockman said, guy who is OMB director for Reagan, Trump's war on capitalism, beginning with the tax cuts, the way that he structured them, you know, leave the dead middle class down at the bottom of the thing. You know, some of the businesses might be able to keep their head above water. But yeah, that legacy, that financial disruption. And it's not only the financial disruption and the Main Street businesses that he killed to support the Wall Street businesses that were essential. And that's another one. I mean, that like I told that story before, we had the video stores we had. We never closed our video stores, not for any snowstorm or anything else. I mean, we would call people, can you make it to work? No, I can't make it to snow. I'll be right. Where do you live? I'll come get you. I had a four-wheel drive Jeep. I would go pick them up and deliver them. And we had a snowstorm. I did nothing but drive back and forth in the Jeep delivering people to work because the people in the neighborhood could somehow find a way to get to the video store. You better believe it. But one time, we had a hurricane that came through, and it took out power everywhere in Cary. And so our stores closed because the customers didn't have power. We didn't have power. Taking out power to our stores wouldn't have stopped us, but if our customers didn't have power, we couldn't stay open. So one store got power back. And so we opened that store up, and we were open up for about 8 hours. And right across the street was Walmart. We were open for 8 hours, and the cops came in and told us we had to close. I said, why? Well, you're enticing people to get out, and I think it's still kind of dangerous for people driving. I said, well, yeah, it's your judgment, but I said, what about Walmart? They've got a lot more people than we do, unfortunately, but that's Walmart. They can stay open. So I can't stay open because I'm a small mom-and-pop store, but Walmart can stay open? Are you kidding me? Yeah, that's when I saw what Trump was doing to people. Just amazing. Well, let's talk about what we can do to try to make the best of a bad situation. A bad situation, quantitative easing, lowering the interest rates, the massive trillion-dollar debts, the repo, trillions of dollars into the repo market in 2019, all the rest of this nonsense is going on. All these chickens are coming home to roost, folks, and you can see it now. Over the last few days, what is happening, not only the financial chickens that are coming home to roost and the expectations that because of the election, Biden is going to lower interest rates even with inflation high, but also because of the war issues. Gold over the weekend broke $2,400. I don't know where it is today. But the interesting thing about it to me is the fact that in just 6 weeks, it's gone up by $300. The fastest climb that gold has had in decades. That's the thing about gold. It has not been a roller coaster. It's slowly and surely changing, but it has really picked up in the last few weeks, last couple of weeks especially. And as they say on Zero Hedge, fast forward to tonight when most other assets were quiet, gold suddenly surged higher. And after closing at an all-time high, gold spiked by another $15 in a matter of seconds, a move which for the otherwise hyper-lethargic asset is the equivalent of a turbo boost. And that's the a dismal outlook proposed last week by none other than the Bank of America CIO, Michael Hartnett, who in his latest Flow Show report noted that investors are looking beyond the here and now, realizing that there is no way that markets or the economy can sustain 5% nominal and 2% real rates of growth, and are hedging two different things. Number one, the risk that the Fed cuts as CPI accelerates. And number two, and more ominously, the end game of Fed interest cost control, yield curves, and quantitative easing to backstop U.S. government spending. In short, something big is about to break. And if the surge in gold leads to a spike in yields, if the bond market sniffs out the end game that gold is currently smelling, it will be up to Powell to once again prevent a catastrophic financial collapse. For those wondering how far gold can rise, we expect from the latest note from Bank of America commodities strategist Michael Widmer. He says gold and silver are among our most preferred commodities, with the yellow metal pushed up by the central banks, China investors, and increasingly Western buyers on a confluence of macro factors, including an end to the rate hiking cycles. Accordingly, we see gold rally to U.S. $3,000 an ounce by 2025. Silver benefits from that too, with prices also boosted by strong industrial demand. This could take prices above $30 an ounce for silver for the next 12 months. And even as gold is hitting these highs, these record highs, central banks are still buying, as one person said. It was actually Peter Schiff. He said the buy low, sell high thing. He goes, even though it's at a record high, central banks are still buying, especially China. So he said last month marked the 17th in a row that China's central bank continued to stack gold. Russia is also doubling its reserves of gold and foreign currencies on its de-dollarization path, further detaching Russia from the petrodollar empire as it reacts to wartime sanctions from the U.S. and EU. There are other blips on the de-dollarization map as well, though much smaller than Russia and China. Zimbabwe has a new gold-backed currency that lets them dump the U.S. dollar for trade with China and other countries. Chinese citizens are trying to divest as well, but from their economy. They're not trying to get out of the petrodollar. They're worried about the Chinese economy. Chinese buying has become so blistering that gold ETFs have gone haywire, with China repeatedly halting trading as ETFs rocket upward at a gobsmackingly high premium against physical bullion. It has become increasingly difficult for the Chinese to invest outside of China due to attempts by the regime to keep investments within the country. So citizens are trying to make moves to protect themselves. They turn to gold. Meanwhile, expectations that the Fed and other Western central banks will be cutting rates this year, amidst continuing wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, provide further rocket fuel for the gold price, with central bank buying helping it hold its new levels despite whatever else seems to be going on in global markets. We have a much bigger problem than they acknowledge, and that's why the price of gold is at a record high, and that's why it's going to continue to go up, he said. Well, UBS, the Swiss bank, is expecting that gold could double from here. They're predicting that it could go to more than $4,000 an ounce in the next 2 to 3 years. And they're at 4,000. That's UBS at 4,000. Goldman Sachs is at 2,700. Bank of America sees gold at $3,000 an ounce. And as this, all this is happening, again, as you're getting record highs, as it's moving very quickly, and at these record highs, you have the central banks buying into it more. What is also interesting is that when you throw in things like the war, you see that Bitcoin and stocks plunged, or as Zero Hedge put it, they purge as gold surges. And they also said Bitcoin in this particular situation with a war and concerns about that doesn't look like a refuge, but a roller coaster. But gold is starting to go crazy as well. DavidKnight.gold to take you to Tony Arterburn. That's one of the key things they said. Make sure you deal with somebody who is reputable, because there's a lot of people out there who are trying to exploit this as people turn to gold for the first time. DavidKnight.gold will take you to Tony Arterburn's WiseWolf.gold. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.